Bad Brothers party. Every year nobody helps me clean up. Why am I yelling?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We're out of here, man.
All right, Lloyd. Thanks.
Maybe we'll come by tomorrow. I'll clean up or something.
Diane, everybody loved that you showed up.
You're a great rooster.
Well. Okay.
Hey, Cora.
So I'm single now. Everything's changed. I hate it.
Give me my fire brigade!
You must chill! You must chill! I have hidden your keys! Chill!
I love you, man.
All right, I love you too. Go to sleep.
Before I'm buzzed.
All right.
Digital studio deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio.
Great.
This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Full on buzz. That's the best line of that entire thing. Every time you played that this morning, because we played that several times as we were getting ready to launch today's exciting broadcast. Every time you played it, I decided on a separate section that I found to be the highlight. Now I believe it is the line where he says, full on buzz.
God bless him. Love Jeremy Piven.
Oh, he's so great. Even before he found his quintessential role, which is that of Ari Gold, obviously. Man, he's already, you know, he was on that show Cupid. It was one of those shows that only I watched. Me and like three other guys. That's it. Three people. That's why that show, I didn't even know that show lasted one episode. Anybody here watch Cupid with Jeremy Piven?
What channel's it on?
That's what I'm saying. I don't even think they made it through the pilot. I think about 14 minutes in, Fred Silverman or somebody called him. Yank it! And they just pulled it right off the air. It's a genius program. Still good for this world. God, what else would he... You know, and of course, he was in Singles. And he was in...
PCU.
PCU. Forgot all about that. What else has Jeremy Piven been in? He's one of those... See, I don't know. I'm claiming to be such a big fan, and now I'm coming up empty. I'm scraping my brain pan right now. I'm trying to come up with other things that Jeremy Piven has been in which he's... You know why? It's because, to me now, his career skips from Say Anything to Entourage. With a brief stop at Cupid in between. That's it. Well, whatever. Anyway, but every time we played that clip this morning, a different line was leaped. Because the line that everybody remembers is John Cusack going, "You must chill! I have hidden your keys!" The great thing about it, too, is how, as they say in the film Patois, how Piven just completely comes from out of frame. Because Cusack's just standing there talking to whoever, talking to Ione Skye or Eric Stoltz or whoever he's talking to. And then Piven just launches himself just like some cannonball. It's like he's been fired out of a rocket. And just comes right into frame and full on like takes Cusack nearly to the ground with him. Give me my Firebird keys! Not just give me my keys. Give me my Firebird keys. And then it just slowly degenerates over the course of the next 35 seconds. He starts with, you know, because he's going to give me my Firebird keys. And then Cusack comes. I know I'm really just analyzing this to death. It's just like that seminar that Roger Ebert does where he does Pulp Fiction frame by frame over 3 days, which he really does, by the way. There's also a thing where you can go on a cruise ship with Roger Ebert and he will analyze Citizen Kane literally goddamn one frame at a time over the course of 5 days. I'm imagining large sections of time between where he opens his jaw like a velociraptor and shoves whole guinea pigs down his throat. Anyway, there's just it's just like unfolding layers of greatness because there's the give me my Firebird keys and Cusack comes right back with the you must chill. And then rather than trying to escalate beyond that, Piven's whole thing is just to de-escalate, to just implode it with the I love you, man. Which has been then co-opted by like a million guys since then. And then for the little coda at the end, the little finale, the little tail on the end is the we're full on buds. Wham! And he has it out. All right. Goddamn, I love that movie. Say Anything. And props to Sarah Dillon for actually finding a movie speech to play at the beginning, because I failed spectacularly to do that. That was a thing.
I keep trying to find the Joe Lies song, and I can't. And now all I have is that in my head. Now.
Have I told you my fantastic idea for Joe Lies?
No.
Okay. First of all, there ought to be a band called Joe Lies. Secondly, one of you wacky emo bands out there whose entire gimmick seems to be that you have really, really absurdly long song titles. Somebody ought to have a song called Gimme My Firebird Keys. Like the Ataris have that song that's called San Dimas High School Football Rules. So there you go. And what's their guts? Fall Out Boy. Have that Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner song. Anyway, Gimme My Firebird Keys, a new hit single from like the blah, 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 blah. Here's another observation apropos of nothing. You know the hardest band in the world to find on the internet? And they're a real band. There are real bands. They're an actual honest-to-goodness band. Kids of my age, especially the 120 Minutes crowd, will know this band.
But kids of your age?
You know what I'm saying. I'm using it euphemistically.
You are clearly heading into the geezer demographic.
He's a child at heart.
I'm young inside. I have the... Never mind. That's going to make a cheap John Wayne Gacy joke. Something of having kids inside. Anyway, the people my age who are were members of the Alternative Nation, you know a band that's impossible to Google? The. There is no way you can find those guys online. It sucks. It sucks worse to be the. I don't even remember any of their singles. I just know that, what's his name? Matt Pinfield, and then before him, Dave Kendall, and before him, Kevin Seal, who hosted the Alternative Show on MTV. And here's the new song from the. Here's another random. I really ought to be spinning this wheel of pop culture observations. All right, blah, 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 say anything. Just retrofit all of this in your head. Also, you can't Google the. And then also this. Why is it that alternative guys always have to be British? And I'm not just talking about Mark Hamilton. I don't want anybody to think I mean that. I'm picking on him. I really am thinking of what's his name? Dave Kendall. That guy in 120 Minutes. And that guy in Seattle, too, who was at the End, although I think the End is now gone. Is the End still on in Seattle, that radio station?
I don't go to Seattle. There's nothing there but that space needle.
There's nothing there for me.
People throwing fish and looking at a space needle.
I don't understand why it is the British somehow equals alternative. I don't know when I'm not saying it's not true. I just don't know when we made that decision. I don't know when we decided. It was like some vote that the radio community took, the music industry, some ballot that we all filled out. And we had to decide on some sort of foreign accent that equaled alternative music. We all just decided on Britain. It isn't somebody from Ubuntu. It's somebody from Britain. I don't know why. Well, whatever. It's 8 minutes and 14 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of June, in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious, studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by. It is Tuesday, and welcome to Day 12. It's 503-733-2970. You'd like to be part of today's program. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. Rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Sarah Dillon if you like. It's sarah@970.am, tim@970.am, or scottyj@970.am. Our phone number once again is 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. And that's right, Jeremy Pippen was on Ellen's show and not her her sitcom. That's right. I forgot all about that. Well spotted, Todd the Corpse. All right. What is coming up today? What are we doing? What indeed? By the way, because that's that Say Anything speech, which really is, I would say anything to me. I'm saying for me now. Perhaps the definitive romantic comedy of all time. I can't think of anything that tops it. I'm not saying there's nothing that tops it. I'm saying right now I can't think of a romantic comedy that tops it. Maybe Chasing Amy, if you count that, but they're almost two. They're almost different genres in a way. They're almost two different. There's two different types of film. I think Say Anything may be the definitive romantic comedy of all time. You just think on that. We're never going to come back to it. We're never going to resolve that issue. I'll probably forget that I made this observation in 5 or 10 minutes. But I'm just saying, for now, I've never felt anything more strongly. At this moment, at 11:09 and 15 seconds, I have never believed anything more firmly in my life. And we're done. So I was such a big fan of that Say Anything clip that we passed over playing the weekly radio address, which we may or may not get today, which is goddamn hilarious, by the way, because it's about Albanians, who are an intrinsically funny people. They are amusing. What else is coming up today? Lisa Goddard's going to be joining us from The Hill. We'll talk about Fred Thompson, who is now number one. He's now leading the GOP pack. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. They're making this stuff up.
I mean, it is from the Department of Things Taken Right Out of Someone's Ass. It is not to be confused with that psychiatric museum in Galore, which is things taken out of someone's stomach. But Fred Thompson apparently is leading the GOP, all of the contingency, ahead of Giuliani, which I believe is only because nobody knows anything about him. They don't really know anything about him. They only vaguely recognize him as being the guy from Iron Eagle. He's the guy who wasn't Jason Gedrick or Lou Gossett Jr. So, and he was also, was he in Hunt for Red October? Or is it Crimson Tide? He's one of those
nobody
movies.
Knows for sure.
That's the thing.
All this stuff is being made up as we go along.
That is the genius of presidential candidate Fred Thompson. This is why he may win. First of all, I hope he doesn't, because he's a singularly uninteresting man. There's going to be no sparks, no fireworks. If he goes up against Hillary Clinton, there's going to be no excitement there. There's going to be no rub, as it were. This is why he may win, though, because the American voter, who is stupid, will look at Fred Thompson and they'll go, I don't know. I figured, and they won't, because he's a character actor. You know, he's not like a high profile actor. He's not like your Patrick Swayze. Or your Radon Chong. He will be strangely familiar to people for a reason they can't put their finger on, and they'll say, because they won't recognize him, and they'll go, I don't know, I feel oddly comfortable with this man, because they've seen him a million times on television, but they don't know why, and so they'll go ahead and they'll vote for him. So, I mean, the only reason he's number one right now is because nobody knows anything about him. He's just in the race. He's still got that golden glow. I remember when Barack Obama had that golden glow, which the Hillary's people have mentioned take right off of him. So, anyway, Lisa Goddard's going to talk about that. Steve Kastenbaum is going to join us later on and talk about some people in Tim Riley's neck of the woods, that is to say, New Hampshire. Am I saying that right?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire. Where apparently there's some idiots hold up in a tree or something, refusing to pay their taxes. The only reason that it matters to us is because they're sending fellow, I'm not sure if Randy Weaver is even a tax evader. I know he might have only been a white separatist. I'm sorry, I almost said white
supremacist.
How
about Ward Weaver?
Ward
Weaver.
And all the, anyway, so they're sending Randy Weaver, who everybody in the Northwest knows from being the idiot involved in that Ruby Ridge standoff, which is one of those things that just cemented our reputation as a place where the crazies come to live. So they sent him out to New Hampshire, so it's like a confluence of all bad. The good news is that we apparently are slowly exporting our morons to the East Coast. Let's see, Jim Roop is going to join us to talk about Phil Spector, who's going crazier and crazier. We'll have the top five. Scotty J has put this together, but I have looked at it, and I do believe it largely to be accurate. The top five songs every bar band must know. Peter Carlin will be joining us at around 2 o'clock to talk about several things. Entourage, which we talked a little bit about yesterday, but Entourage, which has started either its fourth or its fifth season, which is genius. He'll slag on some of the new reality shows, and I'm going to try to pick a fight with him about the Monkees being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What else? That's it. That's it. That's all I'm going to tease. I will get to this scandal involving the hunt for the second worst story in the history of the entire world. Ladies and gentlemen, we're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you? I'm more concerned with how you're doing today.
I'm fine. Never been better.
Have you had too much caffeine or too little?
I believe I've had just the right amount of caffeine.
That's right.
Let me just say this. Now, I have had the same amount of caffeine today that I have every day. I don't alter my caffeine intake. I mean, I won't say never, but very, very rarely do I alter my caffeine intake. I have exactly the same amount of caffeine every day. So, and I had the same thing. I had the same amount of calories that I... Because believe it or not, I am a little obsessive compulsive. I'm a little anal retentive about certain things. So I've had exactly the same amount of calories. I bicycled exactly the same. I mean, like to the foot. The same amount of distance. And I had the same amount of caffeine at the same time of day as I do every day. When I was a kid, I read this thing about Benjamin Franklin. How he would keep this ledger of every single thing he did every single day, trying to find out what made him productive. And I don't take it to quite that extreme, but I do have a series of rituals and routines I follow every day. My caffeine intake today, exactly the same as it always is. Do I seem as though I've had too little caffeine?
No, you just seem a little nutty. You're bouncing off the wall.
Well, I got all this stuff to talk about.
It's true.
And look, Okay, here's a little thing, a little peek behind the curtain. I've got, I know that the wiseacres who will say that the entire show is nothing but pointless observations. Let me say this. I do have a pile. Hold on. Not something on the floor. I do have a pile right here. This pile is completely and totally small, pointless observations that really aren't worthy of an entire segment, but they're things that I want to make an observation about. This is probably an inch and a half thick. This pile of things right there. Just, and that's one of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That is 8 small stacks of things that I bring in here every day. I usually get through 1/4 of one stack, but I do have one stack here that is over an inch thick that is simply and solely small, tiny little observations. Who wants to hear one?
I do.
Who wants to hear a tiny little observation?
Just a tiny one.
Okay, let's see. Okay, just going to pull this out right here. Here's a tiny little observation from Rick's small stack of tiny stuff. This is from, I swear to God, this is from Parade Magazine. That's how you know it's great. Parade Magazine, home of Marilyn Vos Savant. After graduating from high school in Minnesota, John Talbert decided to move west, says this article in Parade Magazine. The day I left, my dad gave me an envelope with information about finding my biological parents, said Talbert, who was adopted. I was 19 and didn't feel the need to open it. 9 years later, while in the Coast Guard stationed in Seattle where he was adopted, Talbert thought about opening the envelope. At age 29, Talbert met his biological mother, and a year later, his biological father, who did not know Talbert had been born. Guess who his biological father is?
Larry Burkhead.
No. His mother is an actress working in educational theater, and his father... They don't even give the dad's name, but everybody my age, the kids, will know who it is. Talbert's mother is an actress working in educational theater. His father starred on television's The A-Team and Battlestar Galactica. His father is Dirk Benedict. They don't even mention Dirk Benedict's name. They just gloss it over. What do you mean, an actor who starred on The A-Team? As though there's any number of people who can make that claim. There's one man. There's one man who can make that claim to star on television's The A-Team and Battlestar Galactica. It's Dirk Benedict. And I believe it to be a slight of irreducible proportions that Dirk Benedict's name is not even worthy of mention in this Parade Magazine article about this guy who looks a lot like Tim Savage. There you go. There's a small observation. Not worthy of a whole segment. Just a couple lines.
I'm doing good.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories today. Hi.
Hillary finally makes her choice for a campaign song. Dick Clark sells everything, even his production company. Rosie is in serious talks with CBS to host The Price is Right. And lazy, selfish, and demanding, along with narcissistic. These are the words I used to describe Generation Y in the workplace.
You're Generation Y. I know you are. You know why? Here's how
why?
I know.
Why? I'm off today. I'm sorry.
No, that was funny. That was really great. Here's how I know that you, Sarah Dillon, are Generation Y. Oh, I wish I hadn't thrown it out yesterday. I wish I hadn't thrown out that carefully crafted study that CBS spent a lot of months preparing and then gave to me. CBS has put together this overview of the people who use the internet. I'm sorry. People who use new media and blah, 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 social networking sites, which is just a way of saying MySpace. But they put it together by generation. It's one of those things. Somebody got paid thousands of dollars to do this study. It's like they broke it up by generation and then by activity. In other words, do you read blogs? Do you post to blogs? Do you pass blogs on to others? Do you create your own blog? Do you blah, 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 blah. And then it's the percentage in each generation who does these things. There's no point to this study at all. It's completely useless, completely tedious. Some guy in a glass room put it together so he could present it to other fat white men in the same glass room. And then they could all go to a cigar bar together. But the point is, they defined Generation Y. And this study just came out this week as being up to 27 years of age. It's like between 20 and 27.
More between 1978 and 1990.
Yeah, so that is you, officially. Sarah Dillon. You are Generation Y.
It is true.
By the cusp. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you today?
Well, Mr. Emerson, I think Mr. Pithens was also in that movie, Gross Point Blank.
Is that true? You know, this is a horrible thing to say. I have only seen Gross Point Blank once, and I know that it's a fine movie. I just, You know, there's only 24 hours in a day, and I just never saw it again.
And I think it's also with Mr. Cusack.
No, it's, well, most importantly, it's got Ms. Cusack in it, too. That's really the big selling point to me. Joan Cusack, who I will not go on and on about because I've been told that it sounds creepy. But I'm just going to say that she's hot. Hot, kind of cool.
Did you like her in Toys?
I didn't like anything in Toys. Not even LL Cool J. And it's hard to get me to not like LL Cool J.
Yeah, I have this like little loop in my head where
that is a tough movie to like.
No, Toys is the worst movie ever made. It's not the worst movie ever made. It is one of the worst movies.
LL Cool J is the tough cop. Yeah, it was bad. You're right.
It is. Toys is one of the worst movies ever put out by a major Hollywood studio. I should have known because it contained LL Cool J and Robin Williams. And those are just two things that don't go well together at all. At all. At all.
Ever.
So, Joan Cusack is completely hot, though. Even in School of Rock, where she played a grade school principal. So, I'm a big fan of hers. Gross Point Blank, fine movie. I don't really care much for Minnie Driver. But I'm a big fan of the Cusack family.
Yes. They are worthy of viewing, I believe.
It's true. Said all you had, sir.
Other than the other fellow you were mentioning, who is also on Law and Order, which I think people will recognize him more from there than the movies you mentioned.
Yeah, but you know what? If this conversation isn't somehow now about Dirk Benedict, I don't care.
Well, he isn't on either of those shows, so I can't help you.
Shut up about Dirk Benedict. He's on the way back.
That's true.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. You don't know who Dirk Benedict is, but he was on the original Battlestar Galactica, and he was Templeton Face Peck on the A-Team. And that they would just slight him this way, and in Parade magazine, really seriously, like you got some sort of page requirement in Parade magazine, like you're going to squeeze it all in. You know what I mean? Really, Parade magazine is just about filling space between the ads for Fabergé eggs anyway. If my dad was Dirk Benedict, I would be telling everybody on Earth that. I'd be taking up billboards. By the way, Rick Emerson's dad is Dirk Benedict from television's The A-Team. How much cooler could that possibly be? Your dad was on The A-Team. How many people can make that claim? I mean, I know George Peppard skewed the curve a little bit by being married like 1,000 times.
All right. I don't think most of the audience remembers Dirk Benedict.
Sadly, it's true. He was also in... what the hell else was he in? Was he in A Boy and His Dog? No, that was Don Johnson. What's Don Johnson doing these days?
I don't know.
This whole opening's just falling apart. All right, it's 503-733-2970. I had some other observations to make, but we should probably just skedaddle into a break here. I had this whole thing I was going to say about the Transformers, but you know what the thing? It just makes. I'm just here's another just right here. One more pointless observation. Let me spin the another wheel of pointless observation. Spin here. From Malcolm. More reasons to hate Michael Bay. Rick, I saw some of the new Transformers toy tonight, Transformers toys for the movie tonight. Bumblebee is now a 1970s Camaro. WTF. WTF indeed, sir. I was at the supermarket with my wife last night. It was one of those things where I had some product I actually needed. And I don't think this is just because we are childless, but because we are childless, we don't have to shop responsibly. I don't have to buy stuff that's good for anybody. I can keep all kinds of vile products in the house. I can keep things in the house that are just made out of sugar, alcohol, and lard. It doesn't matter. I don't have to set a good example for anybody. So I needed some cheese or something. So we go to the supermarket. We end up leaving the supermarket, by the way, with that cheese, a huge bag of almond roca, a massive bag of those mystery flavored Doritos, because she had never tried them and that was the only size they were available in. And one of those big, like, chocolate dib ice cream things. And then, like, the tiniest thing of cheese. So we're there at the supermarket and we're walking along, and she points out that they've got a big display of those Transformers toys. And I know that Bumblebee has been turned into a 1970s Camaro, but I don't know at what point the decision was made for Megatron to no longer be a gun. I mean, I know, this is like when that Godzilla movie came out, that Dean Devlin Godzilla movie came out of the 90s. I know what Godzilla looks like. Godzilla is a big guy in a rubber suit with a zipper going up the back. That thing in that movie that came out in 1998 is not Godzilla. I don't know what it was. It might have been some big lizard. It wasn't Godzilla. And that thing that's in the Transformers movie is not Megatron. I know what Megatron looks like. That's not Megatron. And then she asked me to explain it, and then it just became too much for me, and I felt that I was on the verge of cerebral collapse, so we just had to go home without me talking about it, because trying to explain the difference between Megatron then and Megatron now is just too much for me. And I felt it was going to bring me, close to emotional exhaustion. One more Dirk Benedict call, and then we'll break. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, do you remember, I apologize, I'm in my car, so I'm not by my computer where I just hop onto IMDb, but Dirk Benedict did a movie, I think between Battlestar Galactica and the A-Team, where he was this Vietnam vet. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he was a shell-shocked Vietnam vet.
Yeah. I remember that from my childhood because it still sticks with me that he walked up to that small-town hamburger shop and ordered a raw hamburger.
I can't remember the name of it, though, but I do remember the movie. He was a, and that's the term they use, they now call it post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is the government's way of trying to pretend the problem doesn't exist. He was a shell-shocked Vietnam vet who went crazy.
It was completely Rambo, but it was done with Dirk. Yeah.
I can, it's like Rambo, but with, it's like Die Hard in a Mall. It's like Rambo with Dirk Benedict.
Which is better.
You know what? Somebody will come up with it. Somebody will let us know what it was.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that popped into my head. When you start talking about Dirk Benedict, you couldn't swing a pitch more underhanded to this kid.
Dude, it's what I'm in your wheelhouse, sir.
All right.
Thank you. All right, there you go.
He has two movies in production.
Dirk Benedict?
Yeah, one is called Solitaire, the other is Recon 7 Down. Oh, he just finished Recon 7 Down.
Okay. Why do I suspect that these were both shot, like, in Dirk Benedict's backyard?
These were both shot in Tigers.
Fantastic. With Ray Don Chong. Bam! Callback. All right, I'll take a break. Coming up around the corner, we have Steve Kastenbaum, Lisa Goddard, etc. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio program. It's Sarah Dillon's out-of-context quote of the day. It's growing. It's humorously large. Oh, wait, you also have your choice of this quote. All I'm drinking is vodka and white wine. There you go. 503-73...
I don't like it when you use them out of context.
Well, in context, they're no fun. They sound all proper in context. We'll get Steve Kastenbaum here in just a second. Rick, where did you find the Doritos X13? I've been looking all over town for them with no luck. I'm guessing it was on the Safeway on 39th and Powell. If you could confirm this before I make the trip out there, that would be awesome. I'm sure they go well with the Viso Vigor that I'm drinking at this moment. Thank you, Scott, in downtown.
Yeah, and thanks to the person who stole our Viso out of the fridge this
weekend.
Thanks
so much.
No, I appreciate it. I was really looking forward to that yesterday morning.
Bitches.
Hope you enjoyed it.
No, and you know, and because you left them in the deep freeze, and I rescued them, and I put them in the refrigerator, and then I came in on Monday. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to have a crisp, tasty, refreshing Viso with it, and then open the fridge, gone. Gone. Nothing around it stolen. Just those. All right, that's fine. I'm not bitter. I'm a little bitter. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City, the one, the only, Steve Kastenbaum, joining us now from CNN Radio. Why, hello, sir, and how is your Tuesday?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm dandy. I'm fantastic. I'm wonderful. Little caffeinated today. let's talk about our good friend, and by good friend I mean nutcase white separatist, Randy Weaver. I'm sorry, as he's apparently now known, Randall Weaver. Now, New Hampshire, is that, I can never remember, is New Hampshire the live free or die place?
It is.
All right, well, apparently it's live free or die or pay taxes or get arrested or whatever. So there's some more of these. Let me just say as a disclaimer, because we are in the Northwest and it is a talk radio station, which means there's any number of, separatist wackos of every stripe probably listening. We can all agree that we pay too many taxes. Blah, 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 blah. But what is the deal with these guys in New Hampshire? These aren't some people barricaded in a house with like a bunch of guns or something, is it?
Getting there. It's Ed and Elaine Brown. Now, they were convicted a couple of months ago, of not paying their taxes, of hiding $1.9 million in income from 1996 to 2003, and ever since the feds have been trying to get the payment from them. They claim, like so many other people who have felt this way, that the law doesn't exist.
Sure.
It says that we must pay an income tax.
This is like the Dale Gribble school of thinking. This is the and by the way, $1.6 million, that's about 780 I'm sorry, not 700, that's about 180,000 or something about every 18 months, something like that. I have no, seriously, this idea that if you're making like $120,000, $140,000 a year, you shut your trap about having to pay too many taxes. You know what I mean? There does come an income level at which your complaint about taxes falls on deaf ears.
It's, and I don't understand what they're talking about when they say there is no law, because if you read the 16th Amendment, it's right there. You know, yeah. It says that the country has the right to levy an income tax.
Yeah, don't go injecting logic into these people's arguments.
I know. So they're saying, they say it's basically, you know, voluntary, that there is no law and they're not paying their taxes. But they held this news conference yesterday at their house in Plainfield, New Hampshire, that's been turned into sort of a fortification slash compound. And in the past, they've been militant in their words, but now they're really ratcheting it up. And they've got some juicy sound bites from them, if you'd like to hear.
Oh, I would. Now let's before we talk, in your journalistic opinion, are they just crazy? Are they full on screaming nutcases?
I got to tell you, I think they're trouble, because they've been invited. I'm looking at their website right now, and it says Ed calls for support from serious people only.
Mm-hmm.
No fools, just serious ones. They need serious people willing to fight and come to their aid right now. This is Tuesday, June 12th. Ed and Elaine and others need your help. And apparently people have been showing up at their compound.
Of course they have. Look, let me just... Before you play the sound clip, I was going to say, of course they have. Let me tell you, as a resident of the Pacific Northwest, I am qualified to say this. There are all kinds of morons, armed to the teeth, convinced that, you know, that, like, these are the same people that will get hauled into court and they'll go, well, the government doesn't have that. I do not recognize the authority of any courtroom that has a gold-fringed flag, because that is a maritime flag only. And seriously, they're just like walking, living, cliched stereotypes. And so speaking of which, we'll get to Randy Weaver in just a second. But let's go ahead and play these sound bites from these tax-evading nutcases.
I've got four juicy ones.
All right.
If they feel it was an obligation and they can prove it is, we'll take care of it immediately. We'll write them on a check. Within 48 hours, we'll get the monies out there in the field and we'll get it back to them. They can't do it, folks. There is no law. How many times or how many ways do we have to tell that to you?
It gets better.
We have committed no crimes.
So we don't submit.
We tell them we either walk out of here free or we die. That's it.
Can we do this for you, folks? Don't forget it.
They're doing it for you and me, Rick.
Of course. Thanks. Thanks so much, pals.
And this is where it starts to get a little scary here.
If they come in, we're dead. That's it. We will not be arrested. We will not volunteer to go into their prison for a non-crime. We have committed no crimes.
So we don't submit.
We tell them we either walk out of here free or we die.
That's frightening.
Boy, you know, you can just smell the Salem lights on those people. All right, let's. What do you have? One more?
Yeah.
All right.
You and we have been victimized. We've been lied to.
Right.
People's lives have been ruined. They have been killed, incarcerated, their homes stolen from them, all for a law that doesn't exist.
Oh, please. Seriously, and I mean, and this happens about every 12 years in this country. There's some group like this, and don't get me wrong, unless I'm an apologist for the government. The government is full of bad, stupid, evil, vile, corrupt, incompetent people. I don't think anybody would dispute that fact. But about every 12 years, there's some group of idiots that they lock themselves up inside some Airstream trailer, surrounded by a bunch of other pinheads who call themselves like Führer or something. And then they just sit there and they call a press conference and then they arm themselves all the way up to the gills and then they refuse to come out until there's some sort of firefight, which they then use to try to evoke sympathy for their retarded non-cause. The Montana militia, or the Michigan militia was that way, the Freeman were that way, the Waco guys were that way, Randy Weaver was that way. And now you got these guys, and so now they've summoned Randy Weaver out, who the last time anybody in the Northwest really heard about Randy Weaver was when he and his white separatist family, who are exactly the kind of people you think they are, were up there, in a cabin being surrounded by the FBI, who came in, and then there was a whole bunch of blood spilled up there and whatnot. So what does it say? Let me ask you this. I know, because I'm just freestyling here. Of all the people in the world that these tax-resisting nutcases could have called to come to their cause, why do you suppose they would call a white separatist from Idaho?
Because his stand against the government.
Against
because
the
they
man.
they all believe that this is an illegal government, that our authority figures have basically hijacked the government of the United States, that they're operating illegally, and that the law enforcement agents are paid mercenaries.
Yeah.
Because the leaders are telling them that they have to do things that are actually against the Constitution in their eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure that the Indians are all upset that the white man is having to pay, you know, taxes on his $1.5 million worth of income in the last few years. Right. I'm sure they're full of sympathy for this, for the illegal government. Jesus. All right. So, well, I mean, clearly, Janet Reno, who is desperately needed now, is not around. So, what's going to happen? Is the government going to go in there and just have to steamroll the place?
Well, I spoke to some former marshals about this, and they were saying that, you know, they've learned their lesson more or less from Waco and from Randy Weaver at Ruby Ridge, and they'll just wait these guys out. They're saying that, you know, eventually their food's got to run out. You know, they cut the power, but these folks have solar energy and generators and all that sort of stuff. But eventually there's going to be a cloudy day or that stuff, the generators run out of fuel, and they'll kind of just starve them out if they have to, they think. And unless these folks shoot at the federal authorities first, then we could see a real escalation.
Well, which is, and again, depending on which what side you believe, there is, as there is often, a dispute in events about what happened at Ruby Ridge, where Randy Weaver lived. You know, and every, you know, the government claims he fired, and he claims the government fired, and, you know, and ended up with some folks dead, and just this really hurt. And of course, and the other problem with this is every time there's a case like this, it is just a magnet for nitwits. I mean, just like moths to some sort of retarded flame, they all come out, and you get, I mean, you just get all of these, Randy Weaver, and you get Bo Greitz, and you just get all of these guys who just crawl out of whatever hole they live in just to put themselves in front of the spotlight. You know, always in preparation for some moronic, like, not even a third party, like a ninth party presidential run that will amount to nothing, or to sell some book about how the man is sticking it to you via the satanic instrument known as the Federal Reserve. These are the same people that always talk a lot about international bankers.
Oh, you know what they were talking about, too? It's an illegal government run by the Freemasons. They said
of course. Of course it is. Because why wouldn't it be? And the stonecutters as well.
Right. Yes.
All right. Well, how long have they been holed up in there?
They've been on their property for several weeks now, with the situation where the feds have been around them. I mean, their court case was resolved and ended months ago. I think 5 months ago, I believe. I'm not 100% sure. But they they were convicted a long time ago, and the feds have just been waiting them out. They don't want to have any sort of confrontation. You look on their website, makethestand.com,
uh-huh.
And they've got this picture of themselves that looks like it could be them, you know, on a Christmas card. They look like your aunt and uncle,
of course.
Yeah. And it's just really funny to me to see them in that picture, considering how militant they were at this news conference. And I wish you could have seen the news conference, because there was this one guy who looked like he was just straight out of the movie Deliverance, leaning up against a post on their porch,
with
his baseball cap low over his eyes, and he didn't move the whole time with his arms crossed, you know?
Some sort of real deep thinker leaning up against a stump.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. The Freemasons. That's fantastic. Well, I mean, I will just say this. This is, regardless of what one thinks about their stance, regardless, this is my one objective observation, regardless of what anybody thinks about these people and what they're doing, this is the wrong administration to which you want to issue the threat, live free or die. You know what I mean? Because the Bush administration, they don't really have a problem making the hard decisions there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I guess we'll check in with you and see if, I don't know, to see if, like, Roswell somehow becomes involved as things go on. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend. Try to stay clear of wackos.
You know, unfortunately, if this thing really heats up, I'm heading up there. So
that'll be fun.
Reporting for you.
That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, you're gonna love it there. All right. Thank you, sir. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Take
care.
There
you go. Steve Kastenbaum, kids. All right. There you go. Steve Kastenbaum. All right. 503-7. Oh, and there's Lisa Goddard. God, what a great day this is.
It sure is.
It is. Just things buttressed up against one another. Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello.
Hey, what's going on? Scotty J okay?
No, he... Does he not seem okay?
No, just the phone was ringing for a long... I was ringing there for three solid minutes.
Was it busy or was it ringing?
It was just ringing.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting... We'll have to bring that up with one of our engineers because... you and obviously the CNN guys, you all use the same phone number to call in on, and we were actually talking to Steve for the last couple minutes. I would have thought you would have gotten a busy signal, or that at the very least it would have rolled over to one of the other lines, but apparently if you call the guest line while it is in use, you get a ring. That's interesting.
Ah, I see.
Okay, well, my apologies, and I didn't mean for you to, whatever, yeah, we were just talking.
Oh, no, no worries. I was imagining, I came up with all kinds of various plot lines for a fire in the kitchen.
Well, it is always possible that he's just drunk.
Too much soap in the washer.
No, no, he's, we did learn that his go-to excuse for why he can't get something done if he's hungover, just in case you ever need to know this, if you're at a social event with Scotty J, and he says, I have to go, I left the water running at home. That is code. That is code for being hungover. Just so you know. All right.
That is good to know. Hey, so how are you? How is Steve Kastenbaum doing?
Steve Kastenbaum is great, except that they're about to send him, and by they, I mean CNN, I believe they're about to send him to someplace. Did we figure out where this is? Someplace in New Hampshire? Well, somewhere. Some small pinhead town in New Hampshire. There's a bunch of idiot tax resisters who are like, you know, a bunch of those guys, you know, get a million guns and like, you know, three synapses to rub together between them who are in there insisting that, you know, they're like, I don't know, I swear to God, they held some press conference saying the taxes are a plot dreamt up by the Freemasons. I swear to God. So it's those types. And
it probably was the Freemasons probably did have something to do with it.
Well, of course, because they have something to do with everything.
Exactly.
So anyway, and so and not that this matters to you, but the only reason we were really talking about it is A, you know, Steve's a great guy. We love to have him on. And B, because let me just ask you this. If you were, let's say, holed up in a house with your equally moronic housemate and you decided that you were going to, you know, get a bunch of guns and refuse to come out and refuse to pay taxes on the apparently $2 million you've made in the last few years, which, by the way, immediately obviates any sympathy that I might feel for these people. It seems like the last thing you'd want to do in terms of public relations is to summon to your aid a white separatist from Idaho, which is exactly what these guys did. They summoned this guy named Randy Weaver, who gained some degree of fame and or infamy, depending on who you are, because he and his white separatist family got into a shootout with the FBI up in some, you know, pine tree lodge up in the hinterlands of Idaho back in the 90s up here. So, anyway, just, the world is full of stupid people. It really is. Just they're everywhere. The world is rife with stupidity. I'm taking a deep breath now. Hold on.
Okay.
All right. Well, as proof that their stupidity is not confined to just New Hampshire or Idaho, let's talk about the Mideast situation, because I know the president, but what... I don't mean to sound fatalistic, and I know that I usually do, and I know that I am accused of being a nihilist about these things, but I know that there are some unusual steps and some recognitions and things that have happened in the last couple of days regarding the Mideast that may or may not have long-term ramifications, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm smart enough to keep track of it all. So what's going on? You gave us some bullet points yesterday, but what's going on?
Yesterday we hit the bullet points. Right, essentially a very similar situation, except now there's been a press conference with the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Israel to firm up the fact that they are throwing their support as much as they can behind this Abbas, Mahmoud Abbas government in the West Bank. And basically what Olmert said, the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Bush today, that they could not say enough that they believe Abbas to be a moderate. They're trying to, and they also couldn't say enough that Hamas is the extremist group in this situation. So really it's the rhetorical stab, the PR blow that they were going for today. But a lot of people are questioning how much does it help and how much does it hurt if you're the president of a Palestinian government and you have the president of the United States and the prime minister of Israel supporting you. Right. Is that, you know, that's really a mixed blessing.
You know, and well, all right. And I mean, that's
I mean, you get what I'm getting at. I mean, it's just the Palestinians certainly don't have a lot of love between them and Israel.
I was just going to say, it's not exactly the kind of endorsement that is really going to set smiles ablazing everywhere.
I think what they're hoping for is that it does give Abbas a leg up internationally and that he gets other allies as well, and that he gets sort of world support, that they're able to isolate Hamas in Gaza, and that Hamas may, you know, sort of be stuck there on its own without a lot of resources and without a lot of help.
Well, that was, yeah, it was because, again, it's not the sort of, having the Prime Minister of Israel behind you is not necessarily going to gain you favor in the quarters where you most need it, which is these, you know, these small, violent nutcase.
Yes.
And so...
Rick, I feel very... square peg round hole. I feel like I'm trying to force Middle East politics.
No, it's not that. I'm just trying to sort of talk about it without just sounding fatalistic. Because I know it's a big deal. I really do. I just feel like I know that their whole deal is trying to attain a critical mass of support that becomes self-perpetuating and then overwhelms the small sort of militant nutcase sects that are over there that always just rabble-rouse everything up. But really, I swear to God, I think we're just going to swear off talking about this for a while on the show, because every time we try to talk about it, in my head, there's just a small version of me throwing my hands up going, what can you do? You know, it's like at the end when, what's his name says to Jack Nicholson, he says, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. You know what I mean? That's kind of where I feel we are so often here. And, Dennis Miller today was talking about, the statement that comes out of Iran, which it seems to do about every 18 months, we will wipe Israel off the face of the map, which is, and obviously not to downplay that, but it's just...
And also the Holocaust not real.
Yeah, of course.
They seem to like to add that one in there as well.
And by the way, and I love the idea that guy's head can contain simultaneously the idea that the Holocaust didn't happen. That's absurd. Yet at the same time, he himself has announced the intention to kill 6 million Jews. Somehow it's insane to think that the Holocaust actually happened. Killing 6 million Jews, that's crazy. Of course it never happened. And then, literally the next line of his press release is, I plan to kill 6 million Jews. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And so when you say a square peg in a round hole and a thing inside another thing, that whole place is just one gigantic nutcase religious groundhog day over there.
Right, but it's true. I mean, it is baffling. I agree.
All right. Are they going to do this? Are they going to do this vote on cracking down on gas mileage today, or is that just going to get kicked out? Is that cannon going to get kicked down the road?
Getting to be a mess now. It looks like that's going to get pushed back at least tomorrow, maybe Friday. It's hard to say. This is all getting to be even more messy because after the energy bill is finished, after they deal with those issues about the how much what our gas standards should be, then they'll get to the immigration bill. And there is just today clearly huge internal fights in both parties over what the amendment should be that they vote on and also how they do it. And it looks like Senator Reid really is going to make people stay here this weekend, which has the Republicans all in a tizzy also, and because of the way he's doing it. He's going to force a number of very, sort of hardline, what are called cloture votes, which is your Mr. Smith goes to Washington vote, sure, debate kind of vote, even though they didn't actually have a cloture vote in that movie. But it's a taking people by the throat procedural move in this case, and he wants to have five of them over the next few days. And so everybody's in a tizzy right now, and honestly, it looks like the energy bill may not be finished this week as it was planned, and immigration may not happen next week. So I have a feeling that this will settle down, and they'll figure something out in the next day. But right now, it's not pretty.
The thing about Congress is very much like this program. At the beginning, and you don't really know this because you've never really heard the whole show, but at the top of the program, I announce about 15 things that I say that we're going to get to during the day's show. And then really, 2:59 comes around, and I realize I've gotten to one and a half of them.
That is kind of like that. Exactly. Reid is really trying to get things done here. But he is sort of strong-arming, in a way, the process. But he is the majority leader, so he has the ability to give it a try. The question is it going to work? Because he needs some Republican votes here, and it's rough.
All right.
Rough ground out there.
Yeah, there you go.
Ted Stevens, Alaska senator, now reportedly is under grand jury investigation.
Ted Stevens, wait, he's not the money in the freezer guy.
No, that's William Jefferson. Ted Stevens is the one on big votes. He wears a giant, Incredible Hulk tie to the floor of the Senate.
Really?
Yes, he does. It's fantastic.
How sad that as an American, that's the way that I'll remember him from now on. That's the way to get me interested.
See, you know? That's what I thought. Exactly.
It's like when Daniel, it's like when John Sununu years ago gave an interview where he talked at length about his Tetris strategy. And at that, from that point on, I became like the biggest John Sununu. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy has this great strategy for Tetris. I mean, because I'm just such a moronic American that is the way you appeal to me. So he's under investigation for what?
Yes, well, he is the senior senator of Alaska. He is, in fact, the most, the longest-serving Republican senator in our nation's history. So he has a lot of seniority. And he is now under investigation for some renovations he had on his house and whether, you know, those were really fairly paid for. This is all part of a much larger investigation into Alaska politics in which Ted Stevens' son has been ensnared, I guess you could say. And so up until now, it hadn't affected really the patriarch of the dynasty, but now it does look like he at least had to testify about these. And it's not clear it's going to go anywhere, but certainly there's a cloud of scrutiny.
And just very quickly, just so you know, we got to bail here, but here's just so you know a little insight into how Rick Emerson's mind works. When you said his name, the other thing, I was immediately going through a Rolodex in my head of like, who are we talking about? And then I thought about, what's his name? Who's the baseball player whose head got, who they froze his head after he died?
Oh, geez, come on. I was just talking
Tim?
To him 2 weeks ago.
Ted Williams?
Thanks.
See, I don't know why. You were talking about, hey, that guy from Alaska. I'm like, they froze his head. And then I realized that couldn't possibly be correct.
See, because now I'm thinking about Ted Baxter.
Bam! That's what we call right there. That is, we have run the gamut, the panoply, the gauntlet of comedy. All right. Well, I apologize. We ate up so much of your time today, and I feel like we got to nothing.
All good.
All right. Just remember, the world is full of nutcases and crazy people. Okay?
All right.
All right, and that'll get you through the day. We'll talk to you soon, Lisa. Thank you.
All right, ciao.
All right, there you go. Ciao. All right. As they say in the... wherever. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Hey, let's take a little break, Sarah. We come back, we'll see what Tim Riley has in the AM 970 newsroom as we begin the noon news hour. Is it noon? It seems like we've had about 3 hours of show already. I don't mean it's dragging, it just seems like we've had a lot of content already. This program is content rich, as they never say about our website. All right, back after this, it's the Rick Emerson Show. Here's Ozzy Osbourne. Don't worry about it. Yes, indeed. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the one, the only, the legendary Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Portland police are on the lookout for the scar-faced woman. She's robbed two banks. And she's wearing a scarf. The first one she robbed was the Bank of America on Northeast 12th.
Scar or scarf?
Scarf-faced woman.
Oh, I thought you meant scarf.
Maybe,
say hello to my little friend.
It could be.
Sure,
she's wearing a scarf.
When you said the scar-faced woman, I just...
Well, there are two F's together.
Oh,
scarf-faced woman.
Okay, I really just pictured some woman.
You could have a scarf,
like a black shirt and a white suit with a rocket launcher. I have come to rob your bank.
So anyway, the scarf-faced woman.
The world would know him by another name, Scarface.
By the way, Oregon has dotted just 64 bank robbers this year, so you guys better catch up. You hear that? The scarf-faced woman. Get on it.
I was doing a little John Mahoney from Say Anything there.
Do we have anything else from that motion picture?
No, we're not going to. I won't make you suffer through any more saying anything until next hour.
I told you.
We'll do it next hour.
I felt like I was at a slumber party.
No,
okay. Well.
Do each other's hair later.
That'd be fun.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what happened at the haircutting place I went to on Father's Day. The ladies were all doing the hair and taking turns going to Baskin Robbins because they didn't have any appointments.
I don't understand. Oh, I guess because the women who would normally be the clientele, maybe were all gone?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they were doing each other's hair and taking turns going to Baskin Robbins, and they were glad to see me to get my hair cut.
And you were the bright spot in their day.
I was, yes.
How great. How wonderful.
Well, a truck has driven into the Columbia River. Well, somebody drove it in.
It didn't go in by itself.
It happened near I-205. And they pulled a man out. This is at Marine Drive next to the airport. So apparently he's okay. Marine Drive was shut down from 33rd Avenue to I-205. Then there was another truck that jackknifed at Columbia Boulevard earlier. And, well, that caused a mess. Well, some bad news. The Portland metro area has lost the 100th military member in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that is bad. And then I had another story that went along with it.
I hate that. I don't mean to sound morbid about this. But I mean, but so please forgive the way this sounds. But is it really only 100? I'm not, I don't mean.
That is the Portland metro area.
Okay, and again, and I'm not trying to say that 100 is a low number. Clearly it's not.
No, but
I'm
clearly saying, we're not talking about, you know, the thousands who have been wounded and maimed that we never hear about or see.
Well, that's my point, because at one point, did we not have, but I guess if it is only Portland metro, this is not outlying areas, because at one point, this is, we, at one point, wasn't Oregon sending the highest number of National Guard guys and women over there? But as you said, this is not, I mean.
We don't hear about the injured. And permanently maimed.
Well, let me,
in the veterans'
home. Tens of thousands. And not just, I won't put this on my, you know, I won't put this on anybody in particular, but I mean, I you know, we have X number of people who listen to us or who are, you know, email us occasionally, and I, you know, it's not like I'm some guy with the inside track, but I mean, I hear about people who work within the veteran system and who work within the hospital system, and I mean, it's just, you know, and just the. This is like that thing about the violence in the Middle East that I just can't think about too much because it just makes me so furious. I mean, the number of when they say you know, killed or injured in battle, it's like Carlin did this great thing one time where he talked about how there was shell shock, which became God. There was something else like battle fatigue, which became post-traumatic stress syndrome. I mean, they're all different words for the same thing, and it's a softening of the language because they want you to sort of, because they want you to not think about how terrible it is. And even I do this, too, when they say, well, killed or injured in battle. And, of course, because, it, you know, it's the human sensibility, it is human nature, that when you think injured, you know, you think of like an injury, you put it in the context of your own life. Well, I injured myself with a stapler yesterday. You know, this is not injuring yourself with a stapler. When we talk about American troops, and that's not in the abstract. There are people who are listeners to this show. I mean, that's how it sort of touches us specifically right here. I mean, I won't use his name, but there's the guy that used to email me all the time, you know, is a listener of mine. Some guy. You know, and then one day I get thinking about, hey, by the way, I'm going to Iraq, and, well, that sucks, so, you know, I'll talk to you, you know, whenever I get back. And he's over there right now, and you think about injuries, and it's not just something minor. I mean, these are sometimes are minor, but sometimes they're big, they're horrific, they're life-changing, they're life-altering. And you don't hear that reported, and you don't hear those figures talked about. And the fact that it's 100, and that's just in the Portland area. That's not in the outlying area. That's not in the entire state. That's certainly not in the entire country. And the fact that we're now, what, like 3,400 dead or something like that, American troops?
We have, let's see.
God knows
3,862 members.
You know, God knows how many Iraqis. God knows how many injuries, to American troops to both sides. Just makes me, makes me angry beyond words.
Well, then, Target has to pay nearly $1 million to an Oregon National Guardsman who claimed he was fired for seeking his old job back after returning from active duty. James Patton worked at Target's Albany Distribution Center. He joined the Guard following 9/11. When he tried to come back, he learned he was demoted. He has been awarded $84,000 in lost wages, other economic damages, and non-economic damages. The jury also ordered Target to pay $900,000 in punitive damages, which are designed to punish defendants for bad conduct.
Well, this is because you can't, that's like flat out like a federal crime, right? Some guys in the military, you can't boot him out for that.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing they get.
F them. So let's, hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Not to put any fire to that, but it is statewide and Southwest Oregon, or Southwest Washington. They're including Vancouver with that 100 dead.
So, well, where are you getting that number from, Tim?
That was in the today's Oregonian.
So this is we're getting this from KGW. So take it with
it's
the largest grain of salt possible.
It is, and I really hate to belittle it as well. But they listed about I happen to be reading it at lunchtime. They listed about five or six guys who, you know, God love them, they did their job. they attended OSU. They did not necessarily live in Oregon, so they're kind of stretching it a bit.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, this is a number that we want to get right. I mean, I don't typically care whether we're going to get it right or not.
And that's why I'm saying I don't want to belittle it, but it's like they're including any type of association with Oregon. I'd hate to see what it looks like when you include just injuries.
You know what would be, and I got some email about this. Thank you. I appreciate the call. It would be interesting to see some sort of an overlay, and I'm not suggesting anything, but it would be interesting to see some sort of overlay of the United States and to see where those deployments come from. It would be interesting to see if it is you know, what do they call it, per capita, per, you know, proportional per the population of a state. You know, and I wonder what the enrollment is. Like, I wonder if there's more enrollment in the voluntary enrollment, which I guess is technically the only kind we have now. I wonder if there's more enrollment in the military from southern states, for example, because you do hear so much about how it's pitched to people who maybe don't feel like they have the opportunities that maybe, you know, the other types
of inner cities.
Yeah, or inner cities, you know, because, look, and I you know, whatever.
I've seen ads showing, obviously, what is a barrio in Los Angeles and then trying to recruit there. At first, I thought it was a joke.
Well, you know, the biggest, and I pass it every day on my way to work, a huge military, and I think it's specifically the Guard, as we always know that it's not your father's. This is not Dan Quayle's National Guard. The Guard, which is, you know, just over there, just in it as much as anybody, if not more so. I pass a huge National Guard ad every day on the way to work, and you know where it is? I won't mention the name of the business specifically, but it's in front of a temporary labor place.
Mm-hmm.
One of those will give you a job for a day places.
At Del Monte.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, I drive right by it on the way to work, and it's, you know, it's one of those places where it says, you know, hey, come on in, get some free coffee and a job for a day. And then it's even bigger than the name of the business. You know, the name of the business, which is like temp jobs, we'll say, you know, and that's right out front. This military recruiting banner is like four times the size of that, and it hangs right on the front. So, and I know when I went to high school, and I will only speak for myself, and I know this is almost 20 years ago now, but even in 91... when I was going to high school, you know, they didn't come out and go right to the math kids, and they didn't go to the glee club. They came right to the stoner parking lot area. That's exactly where the military went to. So, you know, there's no reason to believe that the military's unique perception of the American culture has changed. Anyway, all right.
I have more to upset you.
Great, that's wonderful.
The father of the man shot and killed. This is the nutcase that ran after the cops with the knives who got shot to death. Well, now the father is filing a wrongful death lawsuit.
Of course. Why wouldn't he?
They said they should have used non-lethal force, like they had time to plan that.
So you get non-lethal force is for... Non-lethal force is for crowds and for people who are not actively running at you with a pair of goddamn knives in their hands. I mean, seriously, this is like... Wasn't it in Tigered, that idiot a couple years ago, just like running down the street with knives?
Oh,
and then
yeah.
he was running into the house with some knives. I'm going to kill somebody with some knives. And the cops shot him, and there was all the kvetching and the whining about it. Look, I mean...
Well, that's because they show that family picture that was taken at Sears, Smile for the Birdie.
Sears, it was like him in a Letterman's jacket. And, you know, whatever. And I'm a, you know, everybody knows, you know, I'm a big ass, bleeding heart liberal on most things. But seriously, a guy's running toward me or anywhere at me with a series of knives, you know, shoot him first and second and third and last.
As the sheriff's office says, the suspect was advancing rapidly toward the deputy and posturing himself in a life-threatening fashion, so you get killed, guys.
Seriously, that's, you carry knives and run towards a cop, and everything just sort of works itself out.
Get yourself a sleazy lawyer, but you're still going to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the city is going to, what's the legal term for it? They're going to tell you to eat it, is what they're going to do.
You won't be told to eat it.
It is the ruling of the court that you shall eat it. All right. Here's Tim Riley with more stuff.
Say, Kip Kinkle wants a new trial. Remember him?
Oh, man. Kip Kinkle talking about violence. Did you see the front of the Oregonian yesterday with Kip Kinkle on it? No, of course you didn't. Oh, did you really?
Well, I think I saw it somewhere.
The newspaper?
Yeah.
You didn't buy it, did you?
No, I don't buy the Oregonian. They're everywhere. There's no reason to buy an Oregonian. No. You'll find one somewhere. Never.
There's no reason at all.
They print like four for every Oregonian.
Well, I'm not saying there's no reason to read it. Yeah. There is no reason to buy it.
Well, you can go to the KGW website and read the same stories.
Badly written. You can see the same typos and misspellings.
I go watch the evening news and watch stories that happen you know, 24 hours ago with people standing at the same location.
Can I just tell you this, by the way? I went through, I won't say where, but I went to a social gathering a couple weeks ago. It doesn't matter. You didn't work there anymore. But I went to a social gathering a while back.
You did.
And I know, I know.
That must have been a lot for you.
It was excruciating. They had good cake, though. So I went to this social gathering, and there was a guy there who used to work for KGW. And he's like, I used to work for KGW. And he's like, you know. And he said, every time I hear you talking about the grammatical errors and their rather unique approach to the English language and vernacular, and their complete and total disregard for proper rules of grammar there, he just said that they hire just, I mean, just like knuckle-dragging morons. Like, that was his word. His phrase, by the way, not mine. He's just like, you know, they hire just the bottom of the barrel to write news copy there, which is why it's all so bad. Which is why it's like they have a salt shaker full of punctuation and they just sprinkle it over. It doesn't matter whether it lands in the correct place or not.
But once you hired Scotty, there were no good people left.
What was I saying? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, but buying the Oregonian is like buying USA Today. Why would you ever buy USA Today? If you pay money for USA Today, not that it's not a fine newspaper, of course it is. Happy news for happy
people. It is the largest circulation newspaper in America.
It is. It's, I'm just
there's
saying,
nothing in it, but
they give it to you everywhere. It doesn't matter. There's 50 places I could list right now where you walk in and there's multiple copies of USA Today just laying there. Anytime you have paid money for US Today, you've been swindled, my friend. Someone has fooled, someone has tricked you out of 50 cents because it's laying around everywhere for the taking.
I subscribed to the New York Times on Sunday mainly because everyone steals the New York Times. Listen, New York Times Today becomes national news 3 days from now when everyone else copies it and rewrites it.
It is all the news. It is the old gray lady, Tim.
It is the old gray lady.
All right. Kip Kinkle. So
Kip Kinkle wants a new trial.
At least his lawyer. Boy, what a fat bastard he's turned into. I know he's just sitting around and brooding and eating starch.
Well, if
whatever.
You're Kip Kinkle, what do you do all day?
I don't know. I was going to say just sit around and think about stuff, but I can't imagine he does a whole lot of that.
No, here's his brain full of holes.
Yeah, his brain is like a sponge covered with fungus. It's not even really a sponge. It's like his brain is just sort of like a big donut at this point. It's just like, it's just sort of around, like just enough to keep his motor functions going and then just a big hole in the middle of it. But boy, he just looks like a dullard. I mean, I don't know whether he was, how do I put this? I don't wish to sound as though I'm not saying, I don't know
you
whether
to say bad things about Kip Kinkle.
No, of course not. I don't wish to impugn Kip Kinkle's character. I don't know whether he was smart in the book learning sense or not. Clearly he was crazy. Or at the very least, substantially ill in the mental sense. I don't know whether he was an intelligent boy or not, but from that photograph, I mean, that mugshot that we've all seen, where he just looks, he's either drugged or just completely gone. I mean, there's just, and I know that might sound obvious, but I mean, he's either drugged or he's just vacant. There's just nothing there. And then you look at the photograph now, it doesn't even look like him. It's, you kind of forget that the guy's like that age, because in your head, they're always like 15, you know, and on the news. And then you see him now where he's like 28?
24.
24?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, pudgy and just, maybe he's still drugged or just still crazy/dumb. Because he just eyes like burned out flashbulbs. I mean, just nothing. There's just an absence of anything there. Not good. I mean, just my read on it.
Makes you wonder what the Menendez brothers are up to these days.
The Menendez answering fan letter from women. Remember how women used to just love the Menendez brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Them and their Argyle sweaters.
Mm-hmm.
But you just look at Kip Kinkle, man, and he is just, it's just a blank. I mean, if ever there was just a blank, defective, should have been sent back to the manufacturer right at the beginning human being, it's that kid. I mean, you know, whatever. And I guess the justice system will do whatever. I mean, is he even... I don't even know what the deal with Kip Kinkle is. Is he...
Well, he's in jail for like 112 years.
That's what... But I mean, is he in a hospital or is he in jail?
In jail.
So he's not like in a mental ward?
No, he's in a jail.
But I...
He's in the Oregon prison. He's been sent to the youth facility to the Oregon prison.
But I mean, he's not...
an adult.
But he's not like in a mental jail...
No, what can they do for him?
Well, that is true. He does seem irredeemably crazy. He is, what is my wife, what do they say at the where she works? Just plain nuts? He's, they don't really say that.
He's going to be released in the year 2525, I think.
Say it.
No.
Say it.
No.
Now I'm just hearing that timpani open. That's a joke for Craig Adams. Anyway,
he's listening, I'm sure.
Listening and air checking this so we can post it on a message board someday when we're all dead. Here's an air check of KCMD from 2007. Who wants to trade me for some stickers from an Oklahoma station?
Well, do you realize that he wounded 25 students?
Craig Adams?
No, no, Kit Kinkle.
I'm sorry. Let's stop. He wounded, well, how many, he killed some folks, though, didn't he?
He killed his parents.
Well, but I mean students.
Then opened fire in the cafeteria, wounding 25 and killing, let's see, three students. Students.
Did his parents know he was crazy beforehand?
No, I'm sure they did.
I mean, they must have.
They
were
old, too. They were 59, 57. He was a teenager.
So it started so late. I guess maybe he is just irredeemably nutty. I mean, maybe there's just nothing he can do about him. But it does seem like that's a guy who... And spare me the email about how I'm defending the actions of Kip Kinkle, blah, blah, blah. But it does seem like that's a guy who ought to be, like, in a hospital somewhere where they can look at him through a window, you know, and poke him with things for a while so they can figure out why he's so crazy, apart from the fact that he's got big friggin' holes in his brain, which really ought to get you... I mean, really, honestly... It's just my opinion. I'm not a doctor. But it seems like that ought to get you off the hook for being stuck in a regular prison.
Mm-hmm.
Like a regular prison is some guy, for like that dick that shot that guy at the Belmont grocery. That guy should go to a prison.
Mm-hmm.
That guy should go to the PMITA prison and stay there. Kip Kinkle, that guy ought to be in a hospital because he's missing huge sections of his brain. So, you know, whatever.
Well, I mean... They can't fill in that brain with other pieces of brain, so what can they do with it?
Fill it with socks. Fill it with old laundry. Store some candy wrappers in there.
Bubble wrap.
It's packing peanuts. We've substituted the rest of Kip Kinkle's brain with Folgers crystals. Does that Folgers crystals joke resonate with Generation Y, Sarah? Do you still know? Do you know what we're talking about when we do that?
Repeat it again.
We've replaced large sections of Kip Kinkle's brain with Folgers crystals.
Well, I mean, I know what Folgers crystals are.
But, I mean, do you get the reference?
That's instant coffee.
When they substitute the regular coffee.
In the commercial, and then see if people know. Okay, all right. Just checking. See, I wanted to make sure that reference... Because you know what? That reference has infinite applications. You can use that constantly.
People don't drink instant coffee anymore.
They don't. They really don't.
Until like over 7.
Goddamn, instant coffee is terrible. You know what's
that was a terrible thing to...
Instant coffee, we have come so far as the coffee drinking people.
We have.
And, whatever anybody wants to think about this, we have Starbucks to thank for this. We really do. Because Starbucks, unless you went to some fancy-smanchy, coffee place, you were like some upper crust type as a kid, really, Starbucks brought upscale coffee, even though I don't care for it. I don't care for their kind. Starbucks, their kind. I don't care for their kind. I don't care for their kind of coffee. Starbucks brought upscale coffee, though, to the people. Because do you remember how bad coffee was, like, in the 70s and the 80s? I mean, coffee, I mean, I didn't drink it in the 70s, but I drank it in the 80s. And, I mean, it was just like a big vacuum-sealed can of garbage. That's what it was. And, I mean, instant coffee. God damn. It's like instant milk. Did you ever have instant milk?
No.
No, I did.
Like the powdered milk?
I drank powdered milk a lot as a kid. My mom fed us a lot of powdered milk. And powdered milk, it's like powdered eggs. Tom, did you ever have powdered eggs? Powdered eggs were terrible. Powdered eggs are the worst thing on earth. Well, at least you give me that.
Maybe that's good enough with Kip Kinkle.
Yeah.
Powdered eggs?
Powdered eggs. Yes, I've had it powdered everything. Powdered potatoes, powdered eggs, powdered milk. All of it bad. And you know what? Powdered milk, I don't care how much you chill it. I don't care what amount of water you use. It still just tastes like water with chunks in it. It just tastes like water with bits of chalk floating around. And powdered eggs are always grainy. And they always have, like, the consistency of oatmeal. It's terrible. But the instant coffee... Why on earth did anybody ever think that was a good idea? Who decided that we should have that?
There used to be a whole aisle full of that in the 70s.
Oh, I know. And then of course, if you were my grandmother, there was Sanka, which is not only instant, but wasn't that instant decaf?
Yeah.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
Why would you possibly spend money and then time and effort, bark, chicory, making instant decaf? I don't even understand the point of that. Don't even get me started on percolating. Anyway. All right. Well, let's do one more, and then we'll... Have we done one?
One what?
The story.
We've done like a dozen of them.
They were all depressing, so I'm trying to forget them.
All right, well, let's go to Alabama for a quick one here.
I'm sure this will be happy news. Wilcox County catfish farmer Ralph Martin became so irate when he found three kids fishing in one of his ponds that he rammed their vehicle with his truck. That turned out to be a mistake.
Yeah.
Because one or more of the fishermen had a rifle that riddled Martin's truck, injuring him slightly. Martin, the catfish farmer, was treated and released to the hospital in 24 hours. Two adults and one juvenile now in Wilcox County Jail, charged with attempted murder of that catfish farmer.
Okay. There you go. A little happiness for you today.
Should we get this coffee call now, or should we make this guy wait?
Is it instant coffee or a decaffeinated coffee call?
It's about Folgers.
Well, I suppose we could.
We could what?
Take the call now.
Okay. What is your observation about Folgers, sir?
Does anybody remember Mrs. Olsen and her saying, mountain grown?
Here's my whole thing. First of all, what nationality was Mrs. Olsen?
Was she German?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to pick a fight about it. I really don't know. Secondly, why did no one ever express surprise that Mrs. Olsen had apparently just committed a B&E and had broken into your home and had started using your appliances? And then when you came in, here's a strange Danish woman, you know, some weird Fraulein sitting in your kitchen, sitting there, play Misty for me style, having made coffee for you, waiting for you to come home. I mean, that's a little creepy, don't you think? We've been out all day. Let's come home. Hey, there's a German woman in our kitchen, and she's eating our food. Let's sit and have a conversation with her. It's just very strange. And then what are you doing over there?
Mrs. Olsen, I just can't make good coffee.
Oh, here we go.
Good coffee is no problem with Folgers. Folgers is mountain grown, the richest kind. You try it.
This coffee is great. What'd you do?
I finally found the right coffee. Folgers.
Try Folgers, mountain grown for better flavor.
Oh, that's a 70s announcer voice.
Yeah.
Boy, you don't hear announcers like, this is the story of Howard Beale. You don't hear announcers like that anymore.
Nope.
That's
to go with your Folgers Crystal, the whole reference about switch to Sanka.
Was there?
Well, no, when people were trying to get off of, caffeinated coffee and go to Sanka.
Was Sanka caffeine-free or was it half-caf?
I think it was a decaffeinated, I don't know, because I was real young when the Sanka and the Tab commercials were on, so
yeah.
Who knows. Hey, one final thing.
Yes.
The guy who's traveling out there.
Yeah.
I had called in with the first destination of the mini Stonehenge.
Uh-huh.
And if you're taking calls about the final destination, I would like to log in either Crater Lake as the finale, or come up the Oregon coast and look at the fine lighthouses of the Oregon coast.
That is cool. And Crater Lake is pretty badass. I'm not an outdoors guy.
It'll make you freak. When you come up and you look over and see how blue it is, I don't know how you could end a trip better.
I'm not an outdoors guy, but Crater Lake will blow your mind. It really will. Yeah. All right, excellent. Thank you, sir. All right, we take a break here. Back after this.
So Malou's still sore at you, huh?
Yeah. Jim never vomits at home.
It never fails. You call her up and say real friendly. Real friendly. Tell Malou, honey, sweetie pie, baby girl, doll face. How about meeting me for a cup of Sanka coffee?
Huh?
I got so much I want to tell you over a cup of Sanka coffee that's made from a blend of rich, flavorful coffees. And since Sanka coffee's 97% caffeine free, we can drink as much as we want. Yeah.
And then I want to put it to you in an Arco bathroom. All right, back after this is the Rick Emerson Show.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 2535, ain't gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill.
Could only have been a hit during the 60s.
I believe it was 69.
I don't have this on a 45, but nobody is going to care. What is it? Oh, what is it? Everybody's going to look at you?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was all about taking your children from a long glass tube.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That one's going all the way to number one. Zager and Ellen. Hit that. Isn't that the worst song?
I kind of like it.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Here's the line about your kid being in a series of two. It was number one on the pop charts in 1969.
Whoa, whoa.
It was also number one the day that man landed on the moon.
Really?
Yeah. It was number one for 6 weeks.
Well, there's just the barest rudiments of a melody to this song.
I never really realized how terrible the song was growing up. Get this time for the
judgment day. Remember, there's that the haunting breakdown part at the end.
Anyway, so I don't have this single, but I do have this on a compilation that a local radio station put out when I was a kid, a double LP called Solid Gold Hits or something, or other, from KALE Radio. It had this, and then Do You Know the Way to San Jose? It had Light My Fire by Mr. Jose Feliciano.
Yeah, it's all at the same time.
Chewy Chewy by the Ohio Express.
Oh, yeah.
Still one of my favorite pop songs of all time. All right, now we have to let it finish.
Whoa, whoa. So. Now it's been 10,000 years. Man has cried a billion tears.
It's like a bad Aldous Huxley poem.
What we never knew. Now man's reign is through. But through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight.
That's such a terrible song.
So very far away.
That clears that up. Well, there you go.
On the hip right, Zager and Evans. In the year 2525. Number one on the charts for 6 weeks.
You're 1969. Kidding me.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody was high. All right. There's
final. Free love and whatnot.
It's really the whatnot. It's not so much the free love. Yeah. It was the whatnot that was the downfall. It's 503-733. So that, it was 6 weeks. Does it say when in 69?
It was when man landed on the moon.
So that would have been when, though?
July 20th.
So it was July, June, July, August. So it was number one, because I always, for me, the end of, like I was there, for me, the end of the 60s, Tim. Tim, let me tell you when the 60s died for me. because I think if you were to ask historians, they would all agree that the end of the peace and love era was when, Tim Riley?
I guess it was at the end of the Summer of Love in 67.
Well, see, but I would...
If you're doing it that way.
I would say it was like the Manson killings. I think a lot of people say that is sort of the end of the peace and love era, which I believe that song was number one.
Yeah, that
one.
Kind of took the fun out of it.
Yes. Yes, it does.
That's when they went too far.
Have hippie killers gone too far? Here's Tim Riley.
What were we doing?
Well, we got calls about powdered eggs, and we got somebody who went to school with Kip Kinkle's sister.
Hmm. I don't know very much about Kip Kinkle's sister. Let's hear all about it.
Okay. And then we'll get this powdered eggs comment.
Ah, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. Yeah, I graduated from Thurston and went to school with his sister. She was 2 years ahead of me.
So before we proceed in this call, let's try to be sensitive to the fact that no one chooses to be Kip Kinkle's sister.
No, she was great. She was really nice.
Okay.
She was very nice, very attractive, very smart.
Was her name Kim?
Was there Kim and Kip? Was there it's like a morning show? From the best of your knowledge, was there any sort of a? Was there any sort of a sense in advance that he was crazy?
No, I didn't really know him. He would have been, when I graduated, maybe a freshman or a sophomore.
Yeah, so...
But his family was like, both his parents were teachers and just kind of really well-respected.
That's always the case, creator. Right? Whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's the quiet ones you got to look out for, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, and it's just weird, man. I don't think I was living here. What year did that happen?
I guess I
moved back here, so interesting. All right. Yeah, that's just a weird... And what school did he go to?
Thurston.
Yeah, see, and that's one of those things that's like, it's like going to Kent State or something. It's like one of those things they'll never get back.
There were a couple of high schools in Springfield itself. The other high school that's not Thurston is a school with no windows.
Oh, that's handy.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
All righty.
There you go. Let's get this powdered egg comment. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, yeah, this is Logan.
Hey, Logan, how you doing? How's the explosive diarrhea?
It's under control for these past few hours.
Okay. How can I help you, Logan?
I was wondering how you could create such monstrosities like powdered eggs.
Well, really, it's not so much a why as it is a why. Science can create anything, Logan.
This is an advanced nation.
We are a nation of ingenuity, Logan. We have laser heart surgery, men on the moon. You don't need to be bald, Logan. The thing about it is, no, I mean, you can make powdered anything. I mean, they have, like, if you go to OMSI, you tour OMSI, and they'll give you, like, you can buy, like, in that room, there's, like, a powdered ice, or not powdered, but I mean, like, what is it, deep frozen? What is it, freeze-dried ice cream?
I've never been there.
Oh, yeah. Freeze-dried ice cream is good.
Well, but I mean, there you go. It's fundamentally a wet, runny, watery product that they have made dry and powdery. So it is with eggs. And so they just put them in a thing, and they whirl it around, and then there's a vacuum, and then something sucks something into something else, and then bam, powdered eggs. The question is, why would you want to have powdered eggs? And the answer is because you hate your children, and you wish to punish them at every turn, Logan.
Bad grades equals powdered eggs, boys.
Exactly. Exactly. How are you spending your summer, Logan?
Well, I've just been sleeping a lot and playing video games and all the normal kid crap. But, a relative's flying in today, so...
Yeah, try to avoid them. They're no good.
Well, this one's kind of cool, and then there's four other children coming, so...
Yeah, hide your possessions.
Oh, yes, I've done that well.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Logan. Enjoy your day, sir.
Thank you.
Bye now. All right. There you go. It's the way that he pronounced eggs that really sold that call. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell continues to lobby for the recently vacated Price's Right job. She's writing on her blog that she is meeting with CBS this week to talk about Bob Barker's old gig as host. She has, if they asked me, I sure would.
I hope they don't put her in a room with some heteros. That would just be terrible, wouldn't it?
How could she tolerate
that? I don't know how she could go on. Oh, Rick, this is true. This guy says the greatest thing about Indy Year 2525 is the inexplicable bullfighter trumpets in the background, which is totally... You know what I didn't realize until we just played this? Wait, hold on. What did I have to play just the beginning again?
In the year...
You know what this is? This is totally... what's his name? Ennio Morricone. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly guy.
Mm-hmm.
He did the Ecstasy of Gold.
Yeah.
That's totally where he took it. They stole that from. That is completely an Ennio Morricone song that they've just completely ripped off. All right, there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Hillary Clinton has chosen her campaign song, and it's a homage to two sopranos, Tony and Celine. It's a video spoof of the last scene of the final Sopranos episode. Hillary and Bill sit down at a table in a diner and thumb through the jukebox selections and choose Celine Dion's You and I.
Well,
that's the campaign song.
There's too much here to process. The clip on her website, which unveils this song that she picked, is a takeoff on the final scene of The Sopranos, blah, 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 where they're sitting down and look at the jukebox and hey, hey. And then she picks this god-awful Celine Dion song. Let me see if I can find a clip. Do you have the song?
I did a minute ago. Should I try it again?
No, let me look. Hold on.
Okay. So always.
It's just a... What else do we have? It's just a lot of powdered egg talk. Let's see. Hold on. Where do we have it? Let's see. Well, damn it. Now I've lost my copy, too. I just had it. It was just here.
I had a minute ago, and it got lost.
And here's the thing. I can't believe I'm spending this much time trying to find
the
Celine.
I'll go to the Hillary for President website.
What is that site?
Click to play. Here we go.
What's... Okay. What's that new site? It's like All Hillary All the Time or whatever? AllHillary.com?
I guess so.
She's got some new Drudge Report, but it's like just Hillary Clinton news.
And Hillary does... Is this the song?
You know, does she know the song is not sung by an American?
I've never heard this song.
Do you know that Hillary doesn't have a last name?
We could be voting for anybody. We could be voting for Hillary Duff for all we know. Why would she pick this?
I don't like it.
Why didn't she pick the U2 song? I wonder if maybe U2 would have told her to pound it. Maybe she had some back channel communication and she heard that the band didn't want her to do it. That U2 song, That Beautiful Day, would have been the obvious choice. I mean, that's how you get that. That's how you pander. You use U2. don't know this song at all. Is this song written, I asked this room knowing that no one will know, was this song written specifically for Hillary Clinton, do you suppose?
I'm not familiar with the song, Sim.
Wait, here's the hook.
Can't you just see the doves?
We're up better on America.
It's not good.
Yeah, Hillary's not good.
It's time for America to dream again. Hillary 2008.
I mean, she doesn't even have to run.
Terrible. All right, let's never play that again.
We won't,
I promise.
All right, fantastic. Studio head Harvey Weinstein is apparently cracking down on those viewing pirated versions of Michael Moore's new film Sicko on the internet. He tells the New York Post Page Six he hired a private security firm, and quote, they created a lot of phony sites where people had to input their private information to gain access to Sicko. He's going to track them down and bring them to justice.
Who is this, Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing, is that I don't believe it when the RIAA threatens me. I don't believe it when Jack Mueller, well, he doesn't threaten anybody anymore.
No.
The zombie rotting corpse of Jack Mueller will come to your house.
Cobra.
I've come for your brains and your DVDs. The MPAA doesn't frighten me. Harvey Weinstein frightens me. I will cop to that right now. Harvey and Bob Weinstein scare the hell out of me. If I got an email from the Weinstein, not that I would get one because I, of course, don't have a copy of the new Michael Moore film weeks before it comes out of the theater, that would be wrong. If I got an email from them telling me, like, we're going to come to your house and break your legs, the thing is, they wouldn't even need to say that. It's just sort of implied with the Weinsteins. If you cross them, they'll have you taken up back and beaten to death inside a burlap sack. So, bars of soap inside of socks and things. So, well, whatever. So that might actually work. By the way, Rick, Mrs. Olsen, the coffee lady, was a Swedish woman, although played by a Jewish actress. Just for your information, thought you'd like to know. That is Lisa. Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that so much. A lot of email about Mrs. Olsen here. For example, let's see. What other Mrs. Olsen? Rick. Oh, instant coffee was introduced for the military during World War II. You know, that's where most of the great terrible things came from. Most of the great terrible food products came from two things. Either the World War II, when everything was going to our boys overseas, or during the 60s, when somehow the 50s and the 60s, and somehow the idea that a food was natural became a bad thing, and everything had to be better than homemade, which meant created in a laboratory. And that's when you got a whole bunch of things like Miracle Whip and Cool Whip. And let me also say this. Somebody sent me a photograph of this, and I haven't put it on the website yet. But at the, let's see, is there a Winco in St. John's?
No, but there's a Winco in Tammisbarn.
Really? In your face. That's like having an Apple store in Southeast Portland.
I know.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Somebody read the map incorrectly. I think somebody put a push pin in the wrong place while planning something. Well, in any event, I guess it wasn't St. John. Some listener, and I apologize for just calling you some listener, some chick, sent me an email. I forget her name. But she took a... This is why I love this audience. She was shopping at a Winco. Of course. And at some place, Clackamas, Gresham, my neighborhood, somewhere. And you know the thing that the little signs they hang at the top of the aisle that says the aisle number, and then on either side it lists the products. So to say, like aisle 9, feminine hygiene products, cat food, diapers, aerosol, you know, whatever. And so this, she takes a photograph of this sign from the Winco in, I think it is Clackamas, and it's like aisle 8. And on one side it says, you know, like pasta, canned food, you know, Asian food or whatever. And on the other side, there are only two items listed. Tuna fish, and right below that, aerosol cheese. Aerosol cheese is actually listed as one of the standout products. There's only two things, apparently, in that. That's a full aisle. That is a full aisle. Canned tuna and aerosol cheese. Think about the multitude of steps that had to happen for that to take place. Somebody at the store had to go, now we've got to identify all the goods in this aisle. Let's see. Canned tuna. What else is important in this aisle that Winco customers will need to know about? Aerosol cheese. And then they had to make the sign, because it wasn't the kind where you stick on the letters. Like it was an actual crafted sign, and then they had to hang it. So important is aerosol cheese to the Winco shoppers in Clackamas that I'll find the photo. I swear to God, I'll find the photo, and I'll put it on my site. It really is just gold. Anyway, instant coffee was from World War II because it was easy to prepare while crouching in a mud hole with a corpse. All right, thanks, sir. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Thousands of hours of programming and entertainment, once controlled by America's oldest teenage stroke victim, have been sold for $175 million.
Teenage stroke victim?
Yes, a group led by Washington Redskins owner... That's a horrible thing to have to say. Washington Redskins owner David Snyder has bought Dick Clark Productions.
Okay, first of all, there's so many things. First of all, I'm just going to say... No, never mind. See, you want to know how my brain, when you said teenage stroke victim, and of course my first thought was, what does Joey Buttafuoco have to do with this?
Well, the deal includes nearly 900 broadcasts of American Bandstand.
Okay, and then Washington Redskins owner. What an unfortunate phrase.
I own the Redskins. He said proudly.
My holdings include a coffee packing firm, a box making factory, several small trucking organizations, and many Redskins. That's just unfortunate. What news organization is that from?
Metro Source.
Okay. Oh, what's her name? Mary Kay Letourneau. She's a teenage stroke victim too.
The nail includes...
No, or is it Vili Fulau is the teenage
now
stroke victim?
Now I get it. Now, okay.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's a long way to go for a bad joke.
That was.
Joey Buttafuoco was the only thing I could come up with. Vili Fulau, he's a teenage stroke victim. I guess. Or is it her? Never mind. See, that's a dumb joke. That's why I didn't do it. So I'm sorry. Who is it that owns the Redskins?
Daniel Snyder. He has purchased Dick Clark Productions. It includes nearly 900 broadcasts of American Bandstand and the...
New Year's jiggling Eve.
The 77-year-old Dick Clark said of the acquiring group...
You know,
Clark founded the company in 1950.
I knew you were doing that. I knew that you were going to, but it's still hilarious.
I'm glad I'm able to hear you.
So,
oh, look, it's almost 1 o'clock. The news hour's almost over. And we barely scratched the surface of today's pressing events.
Oh, he'll be back. Okay, but I got a couple questions. First of all,
yes.
Why would you need 700 episodes of American Bandstand? What are you ever going to do with those?
I mean, 900.
Okay, sorry. That changes everything. What do you need 900 episodes of American Bandstand
for? I don't know. They've done nothing with them so far.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like, what is the possible...
They'll show a clip when one of the singers dies or something every night.
That must be it. I can't even imagine what the...
Couldn't they show them on VH1 Classic or is that even too old?
But who
VH1
would watch
Classic? Classic.
There's TV Land. That's it. I don't understand what the commercial application for old episodes of American Bandstand is. Because, I mean, I know there was a time when everybody had their favorite dancer and the blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that time has passed. It's like buying old episodes of Solid Gold. I mean, seriously, what are you going to do with those? Nothing. This guy buying old episodes of American Bandstand is like, we'll get listeners occasionally to somebody, yeah, so I went out and I bought the entire boxed set of, like, the Dukes of Hazzard, you know, and then you realize you don't really want it. You know, I bought all of the Good Times episodes on DVD. Now I realize I'll never watch them. That's what buying, except this guy paid like $100
million. $175 million.
Seriously. It's like the biggest, most expensive, most useless DVD set ever.
Yeah.
Scotty wants to know why Ryan Seacrest didn't buy the stuff. Well, that is an interesting question, because isn't he the heir apparent?
Yeah, he was given everything. Even all Rick D's stuff. Anything that was up for grabs in L.A., he got it.
Anything that was laying around, give it to Seacrest. He sort of won the whole city in a poker game, apparently.
Without even trying.
Well.
Makes you wonder how they do these things. Well, I think you know.
I was going to say, he tried. I'm sure he tried. I'm sure he had to use a lot of... he had to use a lot of grease. Elbow grease to... Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Robert in Southeast. I just wanted to say I had a comment about Mrs. Olson. Back in the day, I saw her, this is before cable, I saw her on TV in an old black and white war movie. She was with the underground resistance against the Nazis or something. And boy, she was hot as you know what. Just incredibly beautiful.
Hot as what, sir?
Hot as a stolen car. How's that?
Okay. Hot as... Okay. Hold on, but do you know what the actress's name is? Because now I feel compelled to look her up.
I don't know her. I'm not on my computer.
Hold on.
But,
well, now... Yes?
Last week you were talking about how hot Janet Leigh was in Psycho.
Oh, you don't even know.
I would like to add that I thought she was her hottest in the movie Houdini. She had this tiny little waist and huge can.
You know, our audience is so subtle.
Interestingly, that day you were talking about Tony Curtis, your man, Tan. He was the actor who played Houdini in that movie.
All right, hold on. I'm looking up Virginia Christine, a.k.a. Mrs. Olsen. I am looking up a photograph of the woman who eventually went on to play Mrs. Olsen. I am just seeing photographs of old her. Let me see if I can find a picture of her. Let's see. Here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, she was attractive.
Oh,
she was born in 1920. Yeah. So it's not just going to be a bunch of really just going to be just going to be lithographs basically.
You can see her Saturday night at Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on Turner Classic Movies playing in The Killers.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
So yeah,
she's a quintessential Swiss Miss.
Yeah. Yeah, she was. All right.
She also did voices in Scooby Doo.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. There you go. All right, we got a break. Back after this. What are we doing? Oh, Jim Roop. We're going to come back with Jim Roop. A lot of observations about Say Anything that we couldn't fit in anywhere else. What else? We talk a little bit about cross-country interviews. He's on his way back. Later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Top five. More from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. And so forth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Yummy, yummy, papa. Yummy, yummy, papa. Yummy, yummy, papa. Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Also, the top five. Top five songs every bar band must know. Also, a random smattering of Say Anything observations and a pile of other stuff that we're going to get to. All right. We just take a moment here. All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. CNN Radio correspondent to the stars, James Roop. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am well. Good afternoon.
How are things in Southern California, my friend?
Hot.
Is that a figurative hot or is that an actual...
It's weather hot.
Celsius, Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit.
Whatever. Are Celsius and centigrade are two different things, aren't they?
No, same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You sure about that?
No, I'm not.
That's why you fit in so flawlessly with this program. I have no idea. You have no idea, but for just an instant, you completely bluffed and you fooled everybody, and I took you at your word. I had no idea.
I assumed it is because they're used interchangeably.
Yeah, but I think that's just by idiots like myself who don't know. You know what I mean? That's like idiots who... never mind.
Go and say idiots like you, Jim. You can go ahead and say
that. No. I would never say that about you. I'm saying...
Not in front of me, right?
This... No, of course. Wait, there you're gone. This inexorably leads me back to the Fort Forte discussion. The word fort, which is constantly and consistently mispronounced by Americans as forte. And I just, you know, at this point, I just sort of... I let it pass. You know what I mean? Because there's certain things about which I can be a grammar Nazi. But you know what? There's times you just got to suck it up and let it go by.
I do that a lot, too, but I do it with things like when people say completely destroyed. Well, destroyed is an absolute. You can't partially destroy something. It's either destroyed or it's damaged.
Let's also talk about this. The other day, somebody, well, Rick, you know, they were talking about, I don't know, strip mining the Appalachians or something. You're like, well, you know, the Appalachians are home to many different and unique minerals. Well, if it's unique, there's only one. It can't be different and unique. So don't.
Or most unique. That's another one drives me crazy.
Most unique. How about this one? You know what really gets me? And I got two of them. They're really, really, really great on me. One of them is, and I know that this is tricky for some people, less or fewer. People will say, well, you know, I'm paying, you know, whatever. Now I can't think of an example. But they'll say, I'm paying less taxes right now. Well, that's not true. You're paying fewer taxes.
True.
You're paying, you know...
You're paying the same amount of taxes, just less money.
Now I don't even know if that one's correct. Now, see, now that I'm on the firing line, now I'm effing it up. But it's you know, it's less weight, fewer pounds. It's the finite unit of measurement is fewer. The abstract is less. Less weight, fewer pounds. Less foliage, fewer leaves. What else? Oh, and here's the other one. The one that really, really, really grates on me, and this is the one that just drives me absolutely insane, is when people use the word literally when they mean figuratively. As when they will talk about a friend of theirs and they'll go, God, she is literally from another planet. Well, she's really not. And why don't you shut your hole? I always just want to punch people like that in the face repeatedly, over and over and over and over and over. Okay, thank you. This segment of Rick Emerson Grammar Nazi now finished. Let's talk about, well, first of all, I don't care about Julia Roberts pushing anything out of her body, but apparently she had a baby.
Yeah, hoo-hoo.
Yeah. Yes.
Like that's never been done before.
I mean, seriously. No, you'll never, her genitals work. You'll never guess. Her reproductive system works.
Well, it's worked two other times before.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, it's not like some weird celebrity thing where she just randomly parachuted into another country and grabbed a baby out of a hut somewhere. I mean, this is like...
You know she'd be slapped for naming her kids Phineas and Hazel.
Phineas and Hazel? Are you kidding
me?
Really?
First two, yeah.
Oh, for the love of Phineas, and I'm presuming that's a boy.
I don't know. They're twins. I have no idea. I thought that too. I thought, no, I hope to hell this is a boy. Well, I don't. But you don't want a girl named Phineas either.
Well, but I mean, at least a girl can get away with having a name that is sort of what is the word? Effete, or however you pronounce it, coming off the heels of being a grammar Nazi, whatever. Sort of wispy. You know, a boy named Phineas is going to have to learn to have a good right hook. You know what I mean?
Or go around the world in 80 days. One of the two.
Well, good reference. It's like naming a kid Casper. You know, it's just not going to work. Well, anyway, so she had a kid, blah, blah, blah. Phil Spector, so they stuck that former attorney in jail, and...
No, she's not in jail yet.
Oh, really? I thought they put her in the hole.
No. The judge found her in contempt, but he says, I'm not going to put you in jail until you have a chance to appeal. So he's allowing her, I think, until Friday to appeal, and let the appellate court rule on it, because she's claiming attorney-client privilege. He's saying privilege doesn't hold here because it's an observation you made, not a conversation you had with your client, and the observation wasn't even about your client, it was about something else. So you have to testify. She still says, no, you're in contempt, but because the judge admires her principles, he's going to give her a chance to appeal it, and then let the appellate court make the decision there. So if it's upheld, she'll go to jail at least until she testifies or the trial's over.
Hey, by the way, this just in. So we've got two emails. I'll read them back to back. This one says, yes, they are the same thing. Celsius equals centigrade. Well, then why the different names? All right, this one says, Celsius is exactly the same as centigrade. 0 Celsius/centigrade equals 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Then for every... See, this is when they start to lose me. For every 5 Celsius, you add 9 Fahrenheit blocks. Of course, it's from some Brit, you know, some British guy. That's where the intelligence and the culture come from, so that's why they know. isn't that like... It's a metric thing, right? Isn't that the metric system?
Yep, sure is.
So, all right. Well, there you go. I had some other observations.
It's just plain freaking hot, okay?
It's all been lost in this whole discussion of grammar and Celsius. I got nothing. Hey, let me ask you this. Have you heard anything about Dirk Benedict, who was Starbuck on the original Battlestar Galactica? No, on what's it? On the And he was Templeton Face Peck on the A-Team. Have you heard anything about him having a kid?
No.
Okay, here's the thing. In Parade magazine, which you may or may not read regularly... Hold on, we got this.
It's in the Sunday paper.
Let's see. Parade magazine. They're interviewing this kid. And listen to the way that they phrase this. It's just one of those personality profiles. And it's just of like an ordinary average citizen. And it says this. After graduating from high school in Minnesota, John Talbert decided to move west. And it turns out he's an adopted kid. He doesn't know who his biological parents are. His adopted parents give him an envelope that contains his biological parents' information, which I didn't think was legal, but apparently they did. And he didn't open it for a long time. Then he eventually did open it. Now listen to this. Talbert's mother is an actress working in educational theater. His father starred on TV's The A-Team and Battlestar Galactica. And then, but they never clarify that. And then clearly, through the process of deduction, it seems like that would have to be Dirk Benedict.
Hmm.
Okay. I can tell that I've strayed so far into a conversational field about which only I care.
I don't know where you want me to go with that one.
I just don't, I mean...
I've not heard anything about that.
I guess what I'm saying is, do you suppose it is phrased this way because they never did a DNA test and they want some plausible journalistic out if Dirk Benedict says it's not my sperm?
Probably.
Is that what... But I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, not that I expect you to be on the Dirk Benedict beat these days. Not that I imagine you've been camped out in the shrubs in front of his house or something.
No, I'm still working on nothing. I was going to get real nasty there for a thing. I thought I better not.
Let's not. Well, anyway, so, you know, keep your ear to the ground for Dirk Benedict news, who apparently, according to the Internet Movie Database, has two films in post-production now. So look for those summer blockbusters to be coming out of there now. Speaking of coming out of the day now, so Paris Hilton, she's blah, blah, blah. She's out when? A week from tomorrow? Something?
Tuesday or Wednesday?
Something like that. So nobody's really going to care about it until then, but there is going to be massive paparazzo, right?
Yeah, but you know, her parents, I guess her parents visited her over the weekend, and they said that, you know, she's holding up well, and she apparently made this comment to them, man, this is a real timeout.
A timeout.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That tells me right there she doesn't get it.
Yeah, she's taking
it. She'll be right back out doing something stupid.
Taking it seriously. Well, that's the good news. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but if she screws up again, because this will come with some sort of probation or parole probably, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if she gets out and if she screws up again, I mean, they'll nail her like twice as hard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, that way, that warms my heart a little bit right there.
And she will.
All right.
She'll screw it up. She'll try to blame somebody else, but... She'll screw it up.
Excellent. Good news. See, so we have that to look forward to, the future failings of other people that we don't know and who've never done anything to us personally.
I just don't get it. People who have the world by the ass on a downhill drag and they wind up screwing up so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get that.
No, but I figured it out. It almost is... It's like Henry Rollins, the spoken word artist and musical performer and pundit. He had this great riff he did one time where he talked about when you go to the airport and you just see these freaks of nature there, and just people are covered in weird, like they strange hair and clothing, and they look like they're right out of the 70s, and weird personal scars, and you know, some guy with three legs, and just, you know, you're just like, where, like, who are these people? Like, where the hell do these weird people, and like the people of the DMV, like, where do those people come from? They're so weird looking. And Rollins had this great riff that, you know, they're extras hired by the airport to add a little personal color, add a little entertainment to your airport stay. Because otherwise the airport and the DMV are tedious places, so they hire broken down 70s actors just to walk around and provide a little amusement, a little eye candy for the rest of us. Just interesting things to look at while we're waiting for our luggage to come off the rack, right?
Now, wouldn't that be cool if that were true?
I think that's what Paris Hilton is. I think God has put people like Paris Hilton here simply so we have something to amuse us. It's just a little bright, shiny object. It's just, you know, just to occupy our time for 5-10 minutes every day, just to take us away Calgon style from the daily grind.
There you go.
All right. All right, my friend. Well, enjoy your hot California day, and we will talk to you very soon, brother.
Hey, we're looking at possibly the last witness for the prosecution in Phil Spector this afternoon.
Oh, really? Is that true? And so then it's the whole defense thing, and then we come down to the will he or won't he testify.
Then we have the rebuttal. But I'm guessing about a month we'll have a verdict here.
Really? A month?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know. Because
the defense case can't be that long.
The wheels of Los Angeles justice grind finer than those of the Lord, my friend. So we'll... We'll see. All right, brother. Enjoy your day.
All right.
Thank you. There's Jim Roop. All right, there you go. Rick. The Rick Emerson Show saved my life, says this email. Last week, during my day off from my minimum wage thankless job, I diligently listened to the Rick Emerson Show, hoping for guidance in this trip through life, and a phrase was spoken by the mighty and wise Rick Emerson and a guardian of common sense. You said, don't buy meat from the dollar store. I don't think I said that. I think Jim Roof said that. No, it was Ed McCarthy who said that. Wasn't me, sir. Very rarely do I say anything wise. You are thinking of Ed McCarthy. He says, I was slapped across the face with your wisdom. I had, in fact, been buying imitation lobster at the dollar store.
No.
And you know that...
That is not true.
You know that's just made out of floor scrapings.
Ugh.
You know that imitation lobster is made out of whatever they found behind the refrigerator at the factory. He says, thank you for the mental whiplash you gave me. It may have saved my life, or at least a very unpleasant night in the bathroom. Thank you. Chuck in St. Helens. Imitation lobster at the dollar store. Ah.
I don't know what's worse, imitation lobster at the dollar store or real lobster at the dollar store.
Jesus.
All right. We got a break here. We'll break. We'll come back. Tim Riley, Say Anything Talk. For no reason. 2 weeks ago, it was all Independence Day. Today, it's all Say Anything.
Oh, we can make it all Independence Day again if you'd like.
Let's not. What else? Then we'll do the top five. Top five songs every bar band must know. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian coming up and more from Tim Riley. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Show. This program, by the way, would ever go from Lily Taylor singing a Joe song into whatever this is, Little John or whatever this is. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It's a Rick Emerson radio program live from Portland, kids. Here's my great Say Anything idea. This is an idea that I had. One of those many ideas that I brainstormed one night after like 500 cups of coffee at my father's place at Joni DeRoshi, and then I never did anything with it. I was going to do this. I was going to create some. See, now I'll say it, and then some band will do it, and they'll be hailed as geniuses, and then girls will flock to see them. I was going to do this song that was just nothing. It was a song comprised of bits of fictitious songs from movies. In other words, it was just nothing but...
You've talked about this a little before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not complete songs from movies. Not like a full song, like a Stillwater song. It was just nothing but small segments of songs from movies all strung together into one big, real song. Have I mentioned this before?
Yes, because I remember I started singing the Matt Dillon song from Singles.
Totally. Wait, how does that even...
I was walking down the avenue.
And then it would be the Joe song. And at some point, I had a list of like 50 of them. And then I was going to work in the John Bender joke in the Breakfast Club. Well, I don't suppose you'll be needing a drink then. And blah, 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 blah. And I was going to string together all of these bits of songs from like 80s and 90s films, put them into one big song, and then release it, and then have some spiky-haired, lead singer. And then I'd be in the cover
of
Rolling Stone.
Sounds like a magical idea.
Yes. I can tell when I'm being dismissed. Here's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Police and the crews from ODOT are working to clear up the right and center lanes of I-5 between Columbia Boulevard and Marine Drive this after an accident involving a semi and a passenger vehicle. They believe the semi, which was hauling industrial lime, hit the rear quarter of the passenger car around 9:50 this morning. The driver of the truck, 35-year-old Robert Glasgow, nobody was hurt, but it's taken forever to clean this up for some ridiculous reason. It's not going to reopen until, let's say, 3:30 or so. A man who was the top enlisted man at a Navy base in Washington State is going to jail. Edward Scott pled guilty to second-degree attempted rape of a child and communicating with a minor for moral purposes. He showed up at a Bremerton motel where he thought he was meeting a mother and her 12-year-old twins to have sex with all three.
Bremerton represents.
Mm-hmm.
That was for you, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
Yeah, that's what
I'm sorry I didn't like
the that. The serviceman's wife spoke before the judge at the sentencing.
He's a good man.
I think that's what he's going to say, too.
All right.
I know he has a problem.
Yeah. He's about to have more problems.
But he's not a monster.
What?
He's not a monster.
Of course he is. F him. And that's a prediction as well.
Yeah, well, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. You know, screw that guy. Screw him for being a pedophile or an attempted pedophile and an a-hole and a jerk and a felon and for being goddamn stupid.
That is stupid.
But seriously, I'm not speaking to the pedophile section of the audience now because I know that no such section of the audience exists. But
I'm just speaking to Bremerton.
I'm speaking to Bremerton now. What kind of moron, and I know that criminals are idiots, but seriously, what kind of moron doesn't know it's an FBI agent? It's always an FBI agent. Yeah. That's like when the kid who sits next to you in math class, who suspiciously is like 6'3" and has to shave 4 times a day, comes up and asks if he can buy a dime bag off of you. You know it's a narc. Everybody knows it's a narc. Everybody knows who the narc is. Everybody knows it's really an FBI agent. There is no 9-year-old who somehow managed to get a Motel 6 room for the night. Jesus. I mean, I guess I should be glad that these criminals are so friggin' stupid because that's why they all end up in prison, because they're morons. This listener says, you have to hear my dollar store story. Well, okay.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Listen, I got my boy for the summer. We went to the dollar store. I'm here in Vancouver. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Start again. You and your boyfriend, what?
It's not my boyfriend. I've got my son for the summer.
Okay.
We went to the dollar store to pick up the things we're going to need for him to be here.
In Vancouver?
We're in Vancouver.
In Vancouver. Okay.
And I'm apologizing ahead of time because
Vancouver summer.
Yes. I sent him with $15 to the side of the store that has the
which would have lasted all summer. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, we'll shut up. Okay, so let me just set the stage. So you have your son for the summer. You sent him to the Vancouver dollar store with $15.
I went with him.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I went with him.
You took him to the Vancouver dollar store with $15.
I gave him $15, uh-huh. And because I know my son, he's the one you've talked to before, actually. He jumped off the roof. He plays Halo. He makes real good money scamming people.
Yes.
But because I've got him for the summer, I sent him to the part that has the peroxide and the band-aids and the cotton balls and splints. And I gave him $15 and told him, get as many as you can.
Yes.
And I'm over doing candles. He comes around with a cart, and this is the God's honest truth. They sell pregnancy tests for $1 a piece.
Oh, God.
He had put 15 pregnancy tests in his basket and wheeled it across the store to me and said, Mom, I need about 5 more dollars.
Did he, now, was he being...
I was mortified.
Was he being wacky, or did he think they were splints?
Oh, no, we laughed so hard because I didn't realize they sold pregnancy tests for $1 at the dollar store. And he was making a joke. Well, he's actually pretty good at that. But
yes.
He was making a joke, but the thing is he mortified me all the way across because there's 15 pregnancy tests in his cart. But they sell pregnancy tests down here at the dollar store for $1 a piece.
I mean, and here, seriously, I mean...
Oh, my God.
It's funny on a whole lot of levels, especially because if you're in Vancouver, what do you need the test for? Of course you're freaking pregnant. You're in Vancouver. Of course you've probably got 10 kids. I mean,
I just kind of thought it odd. You know, I was laughing so hard we actually did just kind of leave the store. I just was laughing so hard the people didn't find the humor
in the
store. So we left both of our cars.
They work at a dollar store. Really, what kind of humor could they find in anything?
A pregnancy test for $1. If you can't find that humorous...
Would you trust the outcome of that pregnancy test?
They're, you know, for $20, if you read the back of the ones that cost $20, it says, don't trust me. You have to go to a doctor.
What is wrong with the pregnancy test, do you suppose, that it ends up at the... That's like when you see those cereals there, you know, and it's like, what is this? Well, it's yogurt marshmallow, Cheerios, you know, with shards of metal or whatever. Like, that's the... all right, there you go. I mean, just the fact... Well, never mind. I'm not going to... Do you live in Vancouver?
Oh, we do. He adores you. We listen to your show. We promote. I have listened since forever and ever with all of you. I've followed you everywhere you've gone. I brought my boy up with you.
Well, but be sure, the next time you're at the dollar store, be sure to spread the word to those guys again. So they need all the humor they can get in their lives.
Oh, we laughed so hard. We laughed all the way out of the place. I said, Tyler, they were $1 a piece?
Thank you, Judy.
Okay, bye.
All right, there you go. That's fantastic. The fellow who's got a promising radio career ahead of him. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Now you can buy a real piece from the HBO hit program, The Sopranos. Lamps, rugs, and furniture. The dressing sets of the long-running show go on sale today in Long Island, New York. Former executive producer of the show, Henry Bruckheimer, says
Don't expect to remake your living room into Tony Soprano's.
Most of the what I would call iconic sets, stuff from the sets has been shipped to Los Angeles, and I'm not sure if Time Warner has even decided yet what they want to do with that stuff. But so what's here is mostly stuff from what I would call one-off sets, characters that were in the show for an episode or two.
Tony Soprano's impersonator Don Metzger says he's in the warehouse browser.
There's stuff here from minor scenes from maybe, for example, from, you know, maybe episode 5 of season 3 from somewhere that they only shot once.
The nation's first turkey manure fired power plant is up and running in western Minnesota. This plant burns turkey droppings and wood chips to create steam power that makes electricity for 50,000 homes. It is the power plant of tomorrow.
It can range from corn stover to soybean straw to wheat straw, beet pulp, sunflower hulls, you name it.
What anything an exciting
that,
place
that
to live.
Could combust and has an energy value to it.
Time now for the Prairie Home Companion.
I was going to make a dollar store joke, but that's better. All right.
Well, Taylor Swift is getting ready for her biggest concert tour yet. Taylor says she can't believe her good fortune.
I write about my life. I write about things that I'm going through and guys that I meet. I don't hesitate to mention names in my songs. I try to be really honest with my music because, you know, if people are going to try to relate to something, it ought to be honest and real.
I'm over Taylor Swift.
A lot has changed for her in the past 12 months.
It's been unbelievable. I mean, a year ago, I was like in high school. So it's kind of cool to be a year later have a platinum record.
How old is
like
she
that.
Now?
Her life is good.
I'm being stalked in bathrooms by you.
A year ago, Rick.
It says she's 17 years old. She's shaving a few years, at least one. Already. The shaving begins already.
Yes.
Year age shaving, we're talking about. Move on. Speaking of feminine needs, though, can I just tell you this? So I remember the other day, I think it was yesterday, I was telling you that I almost, 3 days in a row, I've almost swallowed dog vitamins at home because I got my dog vitamin, which I just now have moved to the other side of the kitchen because I don't want to be taking chondroitin or whatever it is to give my dog because they're right next to my multivitamin at home. I realized this morning, you make all the jokes you want about this, the jokes just write themselves like dollar stores in Vancouver. The punchlines are all over the place. I realized this morning that for the past couple of days, I've been taking menstrual cramp relief pills out of the first aid kit in the kitchen. There's a huge, like, first aid kit, and it's all filled with just, it's just generic, whatever, like generic first aid stuff, like Band-Aids and like cold medicine and like
Tylenol.
Wait,
your house or here in the thing?
No, in the kitchen.
Yeah, they're menstrual relief.
Well, but you know, but I didn't know that because it says it in like minuscule letters. It says it in tiny, tiny letters. Because we don't, God bless CBS, because I will say this, when we worked at other places like Fisher and even Entercom, Entercom, big company, couldn't keep a jar of aspirin around for us to save their lives. I don't know what it is. It's like they wanted us to be in a constant state of pain in that building. Mission accomplished, by the way. And so at Entercom, there was, like, I go into the kitchen, I've cut off my foot with an axe. Do you have any Tylenol? No, store down the way. Okay, thanks. You know, there was just never any pain medication around. And at radio stations, you constantly, you know, people breathe in the same air. You know, you come to work, and people got a cold, you got a headache, or you just, whatever, you got the sniffles. The one thing about CBS is they got a fully stocked, they got a medicine cabinet that is just packed with medication all the time. This guy comes like once a month and fills it. You cut yourself, you nick yourself, you need a Band-Aid, you need a splint, you need a, they got one of those weird heat blankets or whatever they unwrap, that foil blanket you put on somebody if they're caught in a blizzard or something. They got everything in there. But it's all generic. There's no name brands. So there's no like Dristan. It's all like Sinutab, you know, and there's no Tylenol. It's like, you know, Painatol and just all of this weird off-brand medication. And so I got this headache the last couple of days because I got the allergies and the whatever, and none of that new allergy medication works because they've taken the pseudoephedrine out of it, and it's just filled with that PE crap that doesn't work. So I've been taking the regular headache medicine, or so I thought. And so today, just like with the dog medication, I'm like ripping open the little packets, and I'm dumping the tablets into my hand this morning. And as I'm lifting the and it hasn't been working all that well. And as I'm throwing the packet away, I look at it and it says in small, because the name of the product is just like, you know, it's like PMF, which I thought was just maybe the brand name. I thought that was just the company that manufactures it.
Yeah, PMF is pretty close to PMS.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I didn't really think about it. And so I look in tiny letters, it's like menstrual cramp relief. So I don't know if that does anything to you. Is it? Here's a dumb question, Kisara. Does like my doll or whatever
the
hell it is?
All of a sudden.
Well, I wouldn't be.
I don't know what they do.
Of the three of us here, you have ovaries.
Or I might be the highest.
You are the closest thing to an expert. I mean,
I've never used any of those, though.
You've never used like Pamperin or Midol or anything?
Mm-mm.
Do you? No, I don't.
Or menstrual
now, I know
you. Are
get,
you really going to ask me if I get menstrual cramps?
I know you get PMS. Let's put it that way. Bam! Yeah! 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 Oh, ow! Ow! Throw something. No, but I'm not. I don't mean to pry, but I'm.
Well,
you've
no,
never
I'm
taken
definitely not going to tell you.
But you've never taken a PMS medication?
No.
Or a cramp medication? I'm not trying to be jerky
about
it.
Well, birth control in a lot of ways is a form of like relieving pain, like cramps and everything. That's
right.
Actually why I got on birth control in the first place.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm not trying to pry. I just sort of. I don't know. I figured that, like, at some point you're like, girls just take Midol. I thought it was just, like, a thing they do.
No, you should just take Tylenol.
All right. Well, see, because that was my question is, like, is it different? Like, because I'm not like it has hormones or something in it. But my question was, like, does it have some weird, like, estrogen thing in it or somewhere that it's, like, just for chicks? What am I taking it for, like, 4 days? I was wondering if I'm going to come, suddenly I'm going to, I don't know. Insert joke here. Insert haha female trait here that I would suddenly manifest.
Well, the one in the newsroom in New York probably has Botox.
I will say this. I do remember once when I was living by myself years and years and years ago. I woke up in the middle of the night and I had like some leg cramp or something. Just like I'd sprained my leg or I'd done something or other. And I woke up in the middle of the night, huge leg cramp, couldn't go to sleep. Go to the medicine cabinet, like 3 in the morning, I'm like, Tylenol, no, couldn't find any aspirin, anything at all. And it's like some girl had left Midol or something behind in my apartment, and I remember being in having this leg cramp, and I was half asleep, and I didn't want to get in my car and go to the store and buy aspirin in the middle of the night. So I remember, like, swallowing, like, 4 Midol in the middle of the night, thinking, well, it must do something.
Yeah, and it has to be some kind of painkiller, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking, but who knows? So now I have no idea. Well, so there you go.
What was this about again?
I don't really know. We were going to do the top 5. Do we have time to do that now?
Yeah, we could do that.
Sure, we'll do that.
Who wants to do the top 5?
I do.
Hey, let's do the top 5.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire! Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting is the best thing to do. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program, and this is the top 5 portion of that program, as assembled by Scotty J. And a lot of times his top 5s are revoltingly inaccurate, but this one, I give him props for this. This is pretty accurate. There's one real, I'm not going to say it's a mistake. There's just one real unforgivable moment on today's top 5 that we'll get to. These are the top 5 songs that every bar band must know, because some things change and some things don't, and I don't care what year it is. The same crap in every bar you walk into, in any city, in any state, in any nation in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley counting down the top 5 songs that every bar band must know.
With honorable mention, In Excess and What You Need.
I dispute this. I've never heard this being played by a bar band ever. I don't know what kind of bar Scotty's hanging out at.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I passed over a real cheap joke earlier, by the way. Because Tim has that East Coast accent of certain things. And Tim does a hard G sometimes when he speaks.
What's a hard G?
It's like G as opposed to G. Like, my wife does that. My wife can pronounce ring as ring sometimes. What's that?
Grapes.
Well, no. That's... But my wife sometimes will say, well, blah, 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 wedding ring. Because she's a hick from Utah. God love you. I mean, it's true. There is a Utah accent. And it, like you bath the dog. Anyway, so when you were pronouncing Long Island as Long Island, I did skip the obvious joke there. Who wants to hear the obvious joke?
I do.
Go for it.
Long Island is that bar downtown. See, long, because it's a thing. Scotty understands what I'm talking about. Don't you, Scotty?
If you're justifying your joke on the basis that Scotty gets it...
Scotty is a...
What are you doing, Rick?
Scotty's a spokesperson. Scotty, speak for the community. See, he's hiding the screen. It's hilarious. See? There you go. I've never heard a band play this.
No, me
I mean, I've been in any number of any number of types of establishments. Young, old, not really young, just old. But I've never heard a band play this. I'm not saying they don't. Really? The Red Lion? Where? At the Key.
What Key?
Where is that? Red Lion at the Key. What does that mean, Scotty? What is the Key? Jansen Beach? Why are you staying at the Red Lion? Is that a romantic getaway for you and Mrs. J? Tonight I'm taking you to the Red Lion at Jansen Beach.
We can't make it to Vancouver. Here's the second best thing.
I don't understand, Scotty. All right, please come to the studio. I don't even know why.
Well, get up early and go to the Vancouver Dollar Store.
Buy some imitation lobster. Scotty J, please come to the Rick Emerson studio. We'll find out exactly what he's talking about. I can't believe we've played almost this entire NXS song. Or Inks.
My friend Lisa friend just wrote me and told me if you take too much mite, it makes your breasts grow.
Sweet.
I better cut back.
You get some moves.
Yeah. Right, Scotty, what do you mean? Where do they play this? I've never heard a bar band play this.
The Red Lion at the Key, right? They have a band there and a bar, right? There's a bar and
the
a band
Red
always
Lion.
Plays. A place like that, maybe a place like Seaside or something.
Since we're doing the bar band top five, I like how you had to note that they have a band there and a bar. Thanks for that. Okay. So they play this song.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to do all completely, 30-year-old songs, so this song is like 20-some-odd years old, 22 probably.
All right, fair enough. These are the top five songs every bar band must know.
At number five, it's Bryan Adams with The Summer of 69.
I love this song.
This is a good one, Scott.
If you don't like this song, you have no soul and you should be killed.
No. I got my first realistic dream. If you heard a band playing this, you would like it, and
this
you'd sit there and rock your hand back and forth.
It's not about the band. It's about the song. Was it
summer of 69? Sitting on your mama's porch.
Seriously, some bands might play this well, some bands might play it poorly. This is a classic. This is a classic slice of American rock. And people may find that corny, but you know what? This is a great song. This is in the same vein as a lot of those Meatloaf songs, a lot of the Springsteen songs, Mellencamp, all that stuff. The things that many, many people find to be cheesy, but which I find to be legitimately endearing. It's a great song. And you know what? And to the person who listens to the song and cannot identify with any moment of the song, it's your problem, not ours.
Yeah.
Hey, my fault. You had a boring life.
Or they're too young.
It has nothing to do with that. That line that, look, you want to... Here's the thing. And again, this is a thing that I will say, and people can laugh, and hipsters will roll their eyes. But that line about that, right? That standing on your mama's porch.
Yeah.
Seriously,
what's more American?
If you at some point in your life, even if you weren't a teenager, if you at some point in your life did not have a moment approximating that, your own version of that, I mean, you know what, then maybe fine. Maybe you can't get into the song, but this song is a distilled encapsulation of a huge portion of American adolescent lives. I mean, it's the girl who from the song he doesn't end up with, right? Because from the song they don't end up being together, as is usually the case. He has a band. The band talks about making it big, but they don't follow through. They go their separate ways. It's got the drive-in, the five and dime.
You can imagine your own video, even though seeing the original.
This song is perfect. It's flawless. Good for you, Scott. I love this song.
They've tried to copy this in a million different songs too. A new modern song, Skater Boy by Avril Lavigne. She talks about this dude that makes it big in the band.
That is true.
She's
a
Canadian. She doesn't count. She didn't have the best days in America.
No, this is true. That is kind of an update of the song. I never really thought about that. It's like that song. It's that Hey There Delilah song that the Plain White Tees have got out now, which I know that we're on the tipping point where everybody will start hating it because it's a huge hit right now. It's number 6, I think, this week. Beautiful song, classic song, an instant classic in the same genre as this. Hey There Delilah is really an updated version of this, an updated version of Homeward Bound, an updated version of 13 by Big Star. Yeah, if anybody doesn't like this song.
Yeah.
Okay, these are the top five songs every bar band must know.
Number 4, Bob Seger, that old-time rock and roll.
This, on the other hand, is crap.
It is.
This song makes me shudder.
It makes me physically...
It's corporate crock.
Makes me physically ill, this song.
You know,
I think sometimes it's the people that are that love it so much.
It's the audience that makes you hate it.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's not the case. In this case, it's the song. And don't get me wrong. I don't have any hatred for Bob Seger. Bob Seger has sung whatever it is. He's
yeah, like
pretty,
a rock.
No, he's done some great songs. Against the Wind is a great song. You know, for the first 100 times I heard it, I liked Night Moves.
That's actually one of the still best ones.
Feel
out of
Like
album.
A Number is a great song.
Yep.
You know, I mean, but this song is terrible. This is a terrible song.
I can just see.
Say it.
Older folks dancing to this at corporate parties.
Who out there?
And what bar is
the
band?
This isn't like a bar. I mean, I've seen it in like wedding reception bands play it. I mean,
I hate this song. I hate this song so much. I mean, this is, we were just talking about this yesterday. Good artist pigeonholed by a bad song. This is his Boy Named Sue. This is his My Ding-a-ling.
Now, do you think Risky Business buried him in the ground because
of this?
Well, they
didn't bury him. He made a ton of money on this song. I'm sure he didn't hate it. I mean, even if he does, he still plays it. I mean, Bob Seger had no reason to hate this song. It made him $1 jillion. I'm just saying, he's a pretty significant American rock artist, and this song is crap. This song embodies so much of what I hate. I mean, I know I'm overthinking it because it's a 3-minute rock song. But the fact that the character in this song is exactly what you don't want to grow up to be, right? The character, the singer of this song, is that guy who refuses to listen to anything new, refuses to listen to anything that's come out recently, thinks that all the good music came from when he was a kid, thinks that there was nothing made past the age of 25 that is worth listening to. Right? That's the whole thing about the song. Well, there's nothing good now. Only the music from my childhood is good. You don't want to be that guy, and that's who this guy is. F this guy. I hate him.
Yeah.
All right. These are the top 5 songs every bar band must know.
Number 3, John Mellencamp, Rock in the USA.
This is a great song. It is a good song.
Yeah, I don't know, Sarah, you asked the question, you know, what bars do I go to hear these? It's not the main hip downtown.
No, I'm not saying hip in any way. I mean, the only place I hear those are like, you know, out of the corner in New Orleans, like aging.
We have those bars all over Oregon, just like that.
There are a lot of blue-collar bars, especially if you get outside of Portland, probably.
I mean,
you know, where KGON is still king.
I mean, go to the coast. Go to even just step into Vancouver and a couple of the bands.
Well, look, you go to my hometown. You go back to Kennewick. I'll go back to Kennewick, and, you know, I'll go out. You know, it's like, you know, you go out somewhere. You want to go to, out to any place that's a bar, any place that has a jukebox live music. It's this. This is a great song. I'm amazed that it took however long, 30 years of the rock era, for a guy to come up with that hook, that R-O-C-K in the USA. It's so obvious. I'm surprised that nobody's done it.
Well, Springsteen has something that's similar to this. I mean,
it's just that novelty, though, of the spelling it out that way.
Yeah.
Great song. You know, the thing about Mellencamp is his songs don't age. I mean, they have a specific sound to them, but they don't have any of the trappings of the era. Not this generation, not this era of Mellencamp anyway. They all have a timeless kind of production quality to them.
True statement. Stuff from the 80s, 90s, and today from John Cougar Mellencamp sound exactly, you know.
Once the Uh-Huh album came out, he developed this timeless production style that he never changed, which, you know, before that it all sounds really dated and bad, but once he hit, like, the Pink Houses era.
Yeah.
And then he has this great section where he name-checks all the artists, Frankie Lyman, Bobby Fuller, Mitch Ryder. And he makes instruments work that you wouldn't think would work, like flutes and crap. Whatever the hell that is, some weird keyboard. I can listen to John Mellencamp all day. All right, top 5 songs every bar band must know.
No. Guarantee this
no.
one. Guaranteed.
God, no.
No.
He's been wearing the same old smelly pair of Bermuda shorts every day for the last 40 years as Jimmy Buffett.
You can hear bar bands play this one all over the
this
world.
This ought to be number one.
Oh, no. Number one coming up.
You can tell.
I hate it when get requests for this or karaoke requests.
You should just refuse
for this song.
We don't have it
anymore.
In Wayne's World, there's a sign like No Stairway. You ought to just have like No Margaritaville.
There's no Bohemian Rhapsody, No Margaritaville. I mean, come on. Have you ever seen somebody sing Bohemian Rhapsody?
I know, but I'm just saying you ought to have like... That's a good song. This is not a good song.
A good song with karaoke singers is not a good song.
No, I suppose.
This is truly meteoric.
Now, this particular song, if we're on the karaoke subject real fast, is the one where six people want to sing together in a group with their arms around each other and their drinks spilling on my computer, singing Margaritaville like they're the best of buds, but they're all drunk.
You really won't find a wider group of karaoke singers either, though. The Margaritaville singers. That really is just, that's Boomer White. That's Kink White. I don't even think Kink plays this. I don't even think Kink would play this. And they're
too cool for Kink.
Really, I mean,
too cool for Kink.
Why do I hate this so much?
Everybody hates it.
You know what it is? But is there real beast? This is one of those cases, Scotty, like you mentioned, where I hate him because of his audience.
But he's got other stuff that is actually good and fun, but...
Nobody wants to hear it, Scotty.
I see women in dresses with no shoes on listening to this.
I'm sure they're in shape, too. Men in Hawaiian shirts.
Can you imagine going to the Caribbean and actually hearing this play at
your
hotel?
No, they kill you.
Around the pool.
That's like taking your vacation to, you know, Jamaica and going, I'm going to listen to No Woman, No Cry.
Yeah.
Take you out in the street and beat you to death. we've all got a friend who's not a boomer. Everybody, every one of us has a friend who's like 25, who's some freak for Jimmy Buffett. I have a friend of mine, I have the 5-disc Jimmy Buffett box set.
Or loves Hendrix, anything from the 60s, and they're 25 years old.
Well, that's okay, but why would you listen to this? Oh, kill me. All right, these are the top 5 songs every bar band must know. I don't know what your deal with number 1 is
here. I had to pick this version. I didn't pick the original.
I have the original. You should have asked me.
Do you have it with you right now?
No, it's upstairs.
No.
All right.
This one sounds better, by the way.
Oh.
As best as you can make it.
Okay.
At number 1, it's Tom Jones with Mustang Sally, originally by Wilson Pickett.
This is not Tom Jones. This is The Commitments, I'll tell you right now.
Are you sure?
Wait. Mustang. Okay, this is The Commitments. This is Andrew
then
Strong.
This is Tom Jones. I get confused when I
look. I can tell you right from that right there, hold on, let me get back to the... Right there. Tom Jones wouldn't have such a thing.
No,
that guitar line, I can tell you it's The Commitments.
When you have a CD that has various songs on it...
I understand.
And you put it on your iPod, then it'll say various, so you got to remember who it was, and that's not a problem half the time. But whoever this is, I can guarantee any bar you go into... especially like Seaside, Oregon, for instance, or Garibaldi, a bar in Garibaldi. This is going to be playing every hour on the hour.
Isn't that a chocolate company?
No, there's a bar in Garibaldi.
I got to tell you, I mean, I'm a huge Commitments fan. I'm a massive fan of the movie.
I own that movie.
The movie, The Commitments, one of my favorite movies. And by the way, this kid here, this kid who's singing, Andrew Strong, right here. Listen to this.
Okay, this is a better version than the Wilson Pickett one, in my opinion.
Well, a little very different. I mean, Wilson Pickett, the Wicked Mr. Pickett, as he was called, had his own style, certainly. The fact that this Andrew Strong kid, you want to talk about God just reached down and gave him a golden voice. I mean, you know, he got this part by accident. His dad showed up to audition for the lead singer role. And they needed somebody to stand in front of the camera while they did a camera test. Andrew Strong, 15 years old, gets in front of the camera, opens his mouth, and this voice comes out.
I gotta tell you something.
He's unbelievable. The Commitments is a fantastic movie. Again, almost flawless. Great slice of Irish culture.
Sitting at the bar watching somebody choke on a gulp of their drink. Oh my God! I gotta get out to the dance floor right now and do Mustang Sally! And it's just, you see it everywhere. And they just...
I do have to say sometimes, every now and again, Scotty, I do get a little glimpse into what must be a living hell for you and some of your other jobs. That really, Tim and I bust, or I bust on you sometimes for not having maybe the radio background that like Tim and I do, but just as Tim and I have our sad stories from working in small market radio, you do have your karaoke, your sad karaoke experiences.
It is true.
Commitments are so great. You know, this band actually toured for a while, and a version of it still does tour now and again, but a fantastic movie.
Give
problem is when you do this, when you're 15, there's just nowhere to go. Like, what are you going to do after this?
Has this guy ever done anything more?
He does some solo CDs. And, I mean, they're kind of bland, though. I mean, he just doesn't have very good material. 503-733-2970 is the Rick Emerson Radio program. We got Peter Carlin coming up. More from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, and all that you say there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up here in just a few, we'll talk to Oregonian TV critic Peter Carlin about the various things. Talk about the Entourage, see what else is coming up on the TV this week. I might try to pick a fight about the Monkees, but I might wait. I don't know. I might wait and do it later in the week. Rick, about that premenstrual formula you've inadvertently been taking. It's not working. You're still bitching and whining. Well done. Thank you, sir. 503-733-2970 real quickly here. What the hell am I doing? Let's get that. Bob, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why? Hello.
Hey, a couple things. First, yes, Midol and Pamprin. I've heard, never tried it myself, uh-huh, with all my years, sure, in the Navy of heavy partying, but
yes,
I hear it makes really good hangover remedy.
You know what? I have to say, I've actually heard that, too. I've never tried it.
Okay. Well, all right. So there you go.
Hey, my other thing.
Yes.
Bob Seger, old time rock and roll.
Yeah.
Risky business. Anybody? Anybody? Bueller?
All right. Thank you. There you go. I don't really know what that was all about. Did he think he was tipping us to something that maybe we weren't privy to?
What about the Tom Cruise in the underwear dance scene?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had some equally obvious observation to make. See, I can't even think of... I was going to do some comedic riff on that where I mentioned, like, Rick, two words, and then I said something really incredibly obvious. See, it doesn't even... I can't think of anything that obvious. All right, never mind. It's 503-733-2970. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. With a heart full of hate and a head full of things, it's Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Sum up Jimmy Buffett in three words.
Ooh, couldn't care less.
Ah, look at that. Bam. Dude, you are genius. See, that's why you have got... That's why you're Peter Carlin and I'm a mere pretender to the throne, sir. That is... Really, we should just end this call now. I mean, just go out on that. That's a gold. 10 out of 10. Score. Nice. All right. Yeah.
Why? Is there a discussion?
Well, we were doing the top five, and we were doing the top five songs every bar band must know.
Mm.
And that was and we were talking about Margaritaville, which we had ranked at number two, although in retrospect, I think it really ought to be number one. And how I have no radical. I have no.
That's a good word.
Like a Scooby Doo word. I have no logical, rational reason to hate Jimmy Buffett, his fans, his music, people who follow him around, and I do just with a white hot passion. I just loathe him, and I do think it is simply and solely because of the audience. I think it is. I just despise Jimmy Buffett with the white-hot intensity of a supernova. I'm actually, if you were to put it to me whether I hate Jimmy Buffett and his fans more than I hated the Grateful Dead and their fans, I'm not even really sure that I'm prepared to answer that question. I think it's still the Grateful Dead, because you get the feeling that Jimmy Buffett's audience may stink, but it's just a cheap cologne and, like, bad tequila. Whereas the Grateful Dead's audience smells of a sort of feces-ridden joblessness. So, I don't...
Holy moly.
I'm just saying...
I gotta start tossing away my Grateful Dead records.
Well, you can keep... What is it? I think it's the first two you're allowed to keep. I think that's the general consensus that we all...
No, that's not the... Those aren't the ones you're supposed to keep.
Is it American Beauty? Is it Working Man's Dead? What's the other one? What are they
American
like?
Beauty and Working Man's Dead.
Yeah, so there you
but
go.
But then you're overlooking, there's tons of great stuff on Europe 72.
Yeah, whatever.
And then there's Live Dead. That's a great record.
Live Dead has got an interesting title, I'll grant you that. There's no need for like an 18-minute version of anything. Ever. No song is worth, and I say this as a fan of Led Zeppelin, my friend, there's no song on earth deserves 18 minutes.
Yeah, but you're coming at it from a whole other tradition. If we're talking about jazz musicians or bluegrass players, I mean, those guys, it's all about the improvisation and playing through a solo and finding new variations on things to do. And I think that's, if you actually are an interesting musician who can do that kind of stuff, it, 18 minutes goes by in a flash.
Let me just say this, and maybe...
if you're wasted.
I was just going to say, or if you're sufficiently knocked out of your brain on Xanax and Boone's Farm apple wine. I would just say this, and I know that this is a cultural rift that will never be healed in this country, but I think that there are just... I don't believe that I have ever heard a song. I mean, look, and there are anthems that push it. There are anthems that can make 7, 8, 9 minutes work. I mean, you got your
anthems.
I'm saying a song like you take your classic. You take like your Freebird. I can get, well, see, and I know that everybody in America now, it's like legally required that you have to laugh or diss the song or something. But I'm saying a song that starts in one place, it builds, it takes you somewhere, it reaches some sort of a crescendo, a fiery climax or whatever. I can get with that. A song that is just sort of meandering, noodling, where like six guys on stage all playing a different song at the same time, which is kind of what a lot of the jazz sort of improvisational work sounds like to me. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think you're listening very closely.
I understand that you don't. That's what I'm saying. This is a divide over which you and I must stare at each other.
Brother against brother?
That's what I'm saying, sir. It's the blue and the gray.
Someday people will be reenacting this conversation on weekends in minivans.
Bam! You are sliced fried gold today, Peter. All right. Well, I was going to try to pick a fight with you about the monkeys, just so you know. No, here's the thing, and I was gonna try to lay into it all casual. I was gonna try to slide it in all naturally. And I don't even know that I'm gonna do it now. I'm just gonna say
what you just said though was really dirty. You might want to bleep that out.
I was gonna try to slide it in all in the middle of the night while camping on Mount Hood, sharing a sleeping bag for warmth. Speaking of being wasted, I don't even know what I'm doing.
You know, you're reminding me though. Let's just change the subject real quick. And I was noticing, I walk through the Portland building frequently, and they have a sign up. It's this, you know, when they have different months, like African American History Month or Women's Month or whatever, they'll put up big signs, which is cool. So this month, it's like, you know, the Gay Pride Parade was the other day, so it's, they're hooking onto that, and it's the gay sort of awareness month, which is cool. I'm totally down with that. But anyway, there's a whole shopping list of people. You got your gays and your lesbians, and okay, we're all there. We get that, you know, two great tastes that taste great together. Plus bisexuals, okay, cool. And then you get into queers, which I thought were gay people and bi people.
I thought if you were the gay, you were also the queer.
But then, okay, so you got that. Then you move into your transgenders. Which is, again, cool. I mean, to me, that's like, I have a harder time wrapping my mind around that, but that's my problem, I figure, not theirs.
Now, is transgendered, that is not hermaphroditism.
No, that's where you actually switch teams. Just like surgically.
Transgendered is where you have had the operation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know...
Not as opposed to transvestitism.
My question with that one, though, in terms of celebrating, is if it were me, I'd be thinking that I would just want to make that change and not leave a ripple. The idea being that you would be then recognized and identified as this whole other gender.
You pass seamlessly on the other team.
Seamlessly. Yeah. You wouldn't want people to go, hey, that guy used to be a chick, or vice versa.
Seriously, because the whole point seems to be that you just, you know, that you're trying to, if done correctly, it's like a boob job. If done correctly,
I guess it
does encompass that sometimes. If done correctly, it's not noticeable at all.
Yeah, but then, okay, so all that is cool. I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, you could raise issues and everything.
No, but seriously, but I'm still back on the, what is the difference between gay and queer?
That is more, see, that's the thing. That's one distinction I think is troublesome.
Is one more activist than the other?
I think that's what's implied.
Okay, all right.
But then here's the last sub-genre.
Okay.
They call it questioning. And I'm sorry, if you can't commit, if you're questioning something, I don't think you deserve to be recognized.
You see.
Or celebrated.
Get
in
off
way.
The stamp.
Exactly. And here's what I'm thinking. If I'm gay, bi, lesbian, queer, whatever, I'm thinking that these questioning people are cheapening my brand. Yeah. They're diluting it. Because they're not
you know?
It's what the marketing people would call a line extension.
Like, I was discussing that. Yeah, seriously.
One flavor of Pepsi too many.
Right. Yeah. I was discussing this with a friend of mine who proposed that it would be impossible for the questioners to have a parade because they would never be able to agree on where to go. They'd be wandering off all over the place.
That's like when I was in school, and I swear to God, this sounds like a bad joke, but these kids, I suppose it is, these kids wanted to form an anarchy club. And I swear to God, there was like this whole meeting about, well, let's vote on where to meet, you know, and yeah. Whatever. The jokes just write themselves sometimes.
Was a whole other...
But I mean, what is it? Is that I might be the gay, I might not be the gay?
I might, yeah, precisely.
That's like a bi... So it's not a bi-curious, it's like a...
You can't even get it together enough to be bisexual. You're just questioning. And I'm thinking, like, you know, whoever put that one on the list needs to be reprimanded.
And seriously, and again, I don't claim to speak for the gay community. That is the job of Scotty J, intrepid call screener and programming assistant here. He announced at one point that he does, in fact, speak for that community. So all questions really are deferred to him ultimately. He is sort of our final authority on that. But... I don't mean to sound... See, and the problem with talking about this is some, this is some idiot white guy just sitting talking about minorities and blah, 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 and their views and how they're categorized and whatever. I don't really know what I'm talking about, but it does seem like a pretty binary proposition. If you are sitting on a park bench and, you know, some hot girl walks by, you are either attracted to the hot girl or you're not, you know, however you define hot. Some guy walks by, you are attracted to the guy, or you are not. It seems like a pretty gut-level response, or possibly lower. It's like one is either attracted or one is not, and that's the end of the question.
Nah, from what I understand, it's a bit more of a sine wave type thing. And the thing is, to me, though, if you happen to be the person who is attracted to both the hot guy and the hot girl,
yeah.
you just win. And I don't see...
See, and I'm not trying to be crass about it. I'm really not. I just... It doesn't seem... It seems like... And I'm stepping in a real dangerous territory here because I don't know, but it doesn't seem like there is a questioning. It seems like questioning in that context is code for, has one admitted to oneself or is one still in denial to oneself?
Yeah, you
never
know.
There is no questioning about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like when a guy sees, again, you take some typical straight guy, goes to a bar, sees a girl. Guy either wants to do the girl or does not want to do the girl. There is no questioning about that. You know what I mean? It's like you're either attracted to the girl or you're not. And I think, look, and everybody has known or knows someone in their life who... Look, can I just say, look, we all know the guy or the girl who, like, everybody knows but him. Do you know what I mean? Like, everybody, like, we all went to school with that guy, where it's like, we all knew, and we were just, you know, you were just kind of waiting for him to kind of go, well, yes, it's true. You know, and to take down his shrine of Winona Ryder, that he had surrounded by candles in his bedroom, and to put up the shrine of Christian Slater instead, and we were all just waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the questioning thing is really curious to me. I wonder if that is just sort of... If that's just sort of a waiting for one's internal switch to sort of, to catch up. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I really don't even. How did this even start?
Oh, I brought it up out of the blue.
Because it's gay. Well, because you're a pundit.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
My mind's always working.
It doesn't matter to me. I will say this.
I also have the strength of 10 men.
I will say this. Is that because of your powerful male essence?
No, it's because I spend so much time questioning things.
You're questioning powers at a plus five, as the geeks would say. Your questioning muscles are strong. I will also say this, and I won't be specific or identify this, but I will say that it does seem like, how do I put this? Myself and the people I know, you know, sort of my circle of whatevers, my circle of associates, it does seem like together we know a disproportionate number of transgendered people. I know on some level, to some degree, either casually or, you know, or better than that.
Intimately.
Or intimately. Throbbingly. No, I mean, I just say in radio, I know more than I think per whatever the per capita average is. I know several people who are transgendered. And I wonder, I don't know that that's typically the case. I wonder if maybe that's an entertainment industry thing. So it's just an interesting, it's a whole weird ball of wax. Especially because, and here's the other thing.
So you're kind of questioning why that's true.
I am questioning why that's true, and
How would you like a parade?
I'm questioning why I think about it so much. It is, and here's the other thing. I do think about this, too. like the other day, there's some story about some guy, you know, in Virginia. He was working on a logging plant. Loses a hand on a buzzsaw. The doctor's like, "I'm sorry, the hand's really damaged. We can't put it back on." And yet, I think about sex change operations. That just blows my mind. That they were doing that. Like, when did that Christine Jorgensen thing happen? That was like 60 years ago, right? 40, 50 years ago?
I don't know.
I mean, that was 5 decades ago, I think, at least. I think it was the 50s. I mean, that's pretty goddamned amazing when you think about it. That really is unbelievable, and I don't mean this to be silly. That is really some amazing Yankee ingenuity. That is science on the march. The fact that you can make a man into a woman or a woman into a man, that really is unbelievable when you think about it. If you were just sitting around taking it all back to the Grateful Dead, if you were sitting around stoned, that would just freak you out. I mean, it really just seems impossible, and yet it's a thing we can do.
It's pretty awesome.
It really is.
No question about that.
You know, All right.
Thank you.
The best part is that we just spent 20 minutes analyzing something that, by definition, I don't think either of us is ever going to come up with the answer to. So what are you going to do? And I failed to pick a fight about the monkeys.
Yeah. Do you believe that they should or should not be in the Rock and Roll?
Well, see, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because,
you know, I was advanced.
Because the formerly relevant Jan Wenner is apparently trying to block. He's, quote, leading the charge to block the addition of the monkeys to the Rock Hall of Fame. He's desperately trying to cling to some sort of rock legitimacy.
That's weird.
Yeah, well,
I don't see what makes them different from, like, the Shirelles or...
Exactly. I'm glad we're on the same page.
I mean, the thing is, my heart wouldn't be broken if they didn't end up in there. I mean, I guess maybe he's got a more compelling argument or something, but...
He doesn't have a more compelling argument. He is an aging hippie who desperately wants to cling to some sort of belief that he is the arbiter of what is good music and what is not music. And by the way, and I will say this, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth. But I do believe that in this instance, the monkeys are a victim of a sort of, I mean, you know, Davy Jones had this quote, they're talking about, the, you know, using external songwriters. And I do think that group is the victim of a sort of very low-grade, passive form of racism. Because, no, seriously, no, really, because there are all kinds of groups that used external songwriters, external producers, external... where essentially the artists came in and they were hired voices where everything else was done for them. The backing tracks were done for them. The arrangements were done for them. The songwriting was done for them. Choreography done for them. Everything. And groups like the Temptations spring to mind. Groups, as you said, like the Shirelles. Groups like the Four Tops come to mind. But I do think, I don't know, I think that, you know, that because it's, you know, because it's these guys, I do think that maybe they're being compared to, you know, the Beatles, who they are less like than to some of, like a lot of the Motown acts who, in the way that they were created and fabricated and produced and packaged and put out there, they're very similar to a lot of the Motown acts. I really do think that's the case. I think it's just this effed up way in America that we still have to divide things in our head like that. Like the fact that the Rolling Stones go out and tour and people make the obligatory Viagra and Walker jokes and how they're going out there with oxygen tanks. And, you know, nobody had a problem with John Lee Hooker playing until he was like 98. You know what I mean? I think that in America, there's a lot of people and a lot of rock critics and rock fans who still have this idea in their head that, like, they have to keep those color lines separate, which is just, it's just weird and stupid. And I think that's where, you know, it's like the idea that somehow in 2007, you can't have, a rap act that sings in a rock style or a rock band that tries to rap, because that's just wrong, you know? And it's just like, it seems like we ought to be past all that crap. But as much as it sounds like I'm making a mountain out of a molehill, that's what this Jan Wenner thing reminds me of.
So did you have a dream about this? That musicians would be judged more by the content of their characters?
I had a dream that one day, Davy Jones and, oh, who's that guy from the lead singer for the Temptations, that my pop culture knowledge is failing me.
Well, they had a bunch of lead singers. But see, the thing about the Temps is that they were all lead singers, my little friend.
During the classic five.
You had your Dennis Edwards, but he was second gen, actually, but still, you know, but you had your David Ruffin.
That's what I'm thinking.
Is that who you're thinking of?
Yeah.
And the other dude?
I have a dream that David Ruffin and Davy Jones will have lunch together. And Jan Wenner will not be there. Jan Wenner, who just bugs me because he did so much to just tarnish that magazine, Rolling Stone's relevance. And his, talk about a guy who has diluted his legacy over the years. And then this is... And then this is what he expends his energy on. He's trying to keep, like, Mike Nesmith out of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And, if, you know, and I got to tell you this, the Monkees ought to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame if for no other reason, say, what do you say to this, Peter Carlin, for no other reason than they did sort of a very rock and roll thing, which is to rebel against their handlers, even though it meant their own commercial, you know, demise. You know? That's kind of a cool thing. That's kind of rock.
Well, I think in their part, it was mostly just kind of arrogant.
Maybe.
But, you know,
maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe like the Kelly Clarkson thing, how they all decide at the end that they can handle their own money and write all their own material.
Then
they didn't blow. And I'll have my brother-in-law handle the books for me. We haven't talked about anything having to do with television. Do you realize that you and I, two straight white men, sat here and talked about Gay Pride Month and racism and rock and roll for like half an hour after arguing about the Grateful Dead versus, you know, Freebird? I will say this. I will say, and I know that I'm in the minority opinion on this, that the Entourage season opener, in my opinion, best episode so far, ever. Best episode of that show, hands down, so far.
Oh, you are throwing down.
Well, what do you think?
It was interesting. I don't know if it was the greatest. It was cool.
It was ambitious.
Cool.
It was very ambitious. And not maybe as laugh-out-loud funny, but that's the great thing about that show is it doesn't have to be a gag fest all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It had a lot of substance to it. It really did. Go.
True. Very true.
I'm sorry. Am I just dominating this whole conversation today?
You're like on some kind of drug. It's true.
I'm on. You know,
I've been like this all day.
I've accidentally, and this is a true story, I have accidentally been taking Midol for the last 3 days. It's true, and I don't want to tell the whole story again.
What did you think you were taking?
It's Tylenol. It's a long story. We have generic drugs in the medicine cabinet here, and it says menstrual relief in tiny letters. I feel like Lily Tomlin in 9 to 5. It looks just like Skinny and Sweet. I thought I was taking Tylenol. It turns out I've been taking Midol for the last 3 days. I didn't know. So,
cool.
If I...
You must be questioning something.
Good. See, that's a callback. You the way to tie it all up with a nice pink bow, sir.
Well, yeah, it's not pink, goddammit.
Is there anything coming up this week that people should pay attention to on television?
Ooh, no.
Excellent. Fantastic.
Yeah, well, it's that sort of awkward time.
God bless you. Well, there was just that hideous reality show. What is it?
The Age of Love.
Something. Yeah, F that show. That looks retarded.
Yeah.
It looks stupid. The idea that there's some guy's worst fear is that he's going to have to get with some hot girl who's older than he is. As though, like, there's a living hell. You wouldn't believe it. I had to have all this sex with a hot woman who was older than I am. I don't know how I made it through. All right. Well, you know any good jokes?
No, sir.
All right. Well,
no, okay. I already told them all.
All right, my friends. Read them in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. He is the one, the only, the irreplaceable, the worth his weight in lobster, Peter Carlin. Thank you, sir.
Hey, you bet.
God bless you. Back after this for a final wrap-up with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Like us at 3, Don and Mike at 7. Hey, kids, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, one more time at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
An Oregon City man who burned down her ex-girlfriend's parents' house over jealousy will get 7 years in the pokey. Daniel Saunders became angry at his ex-girlfriend because she started dating a fellow named Kyle. So he set Kyle's family home on fire. Luckily, everybody escapes. A 15-year-old student is in juvie in Lacey, Washington for repeated threats to blow up Lacey High. Josh Graysbrook has been charged with 10 counts of felony for sending 10 bomb threats to his high school. His mother said he never meant to carry out the threats and doesn't understand.
Oh, he doesn't understand what he's doing.
I don't Siri, clearly, I don't understand the thought.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
I mean, really, what is it? Are we just raising children whose heads have no moving parts?
Aren't there places outside of Lacey, Washington that somebody might aspire to be?
I mean, no, obviously not.
Do you want to go to jail in Lacey because you're upset with Lacey?
I mean,
it just compounds the problem to get yourself in trouble at a place you don't want to be.
I hate living in Susanville. I know I will threaten to kill everyone here in Susanville, so I will never leave Susanville. Jesus. And especially the fact that the kid, let's see, should I even take the most rudimentary steps to mask my identity? No, I'll just send it from a Hotmail account using my real name. Dear,
not
I
once,
will kill
but 10 times.
Everyone, CC, whole school. Send. Great! You know? Jesus. All right, well, whatever. He's not going to be impregnating anybody if he hasn't already.
You go, girls, say the gals at the Television Gracie Allen Awards last night, the all accepted awards, and all criticized Dan Rather being mean to Katie Couric. Even people who usually don't like her, like Fox News anchor and correspondent Jamie Colby, says Katie Couric should be left alone to do her thing.
You can never sit in someone else's shoes or their anchor chair and know really what they're up against. And we have to give people credit for trying.
Katie Couric needs every inch of an anchor chair.
We have to give them time to find their way and succeed.
More time, please.
Yes, give her years. Give her years and keep giving her $14 million per year, by the way.
Yeah.
I apologize for the chair crack. I'm not going to make any more Katie Couric weight jokes. It's beneath me. It really is beneath me, and it's not even really accurate. I'm just falling victim to that thing. It's the thing everybody's doing, and I'm succumbing to the temptation.
Those gals will tear your eyeballs out.
I don't,
even the ones from Fox.
When they're done crying in the bathroom.
Well, that's it for now.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley, greatest newsman in the world. Back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour, all the way through with Lekas. Do we have another break we're doing?
We sure do.
Well, great. I say great because I don't have anything to do here.
Well, maybe we should take a break.
Okay. Genius. Okay, there we go. And stuff. Lekas coming up next at 3. Does it feel like it's about Thursday already?
It is.
Okay. Well, great. And I'm done after tomorrow. Let's see. Lekas at 3, Donna Mike at 7. Back here in a few. It's the Rick Emerson Show. You stay right there. Part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Let me read this email. Rick, about dollar stores. I've shopped at the dollar store a few times, especially as a child, and have encountered these items. One, gummy bears. These were in the shape of a bear, but I believe they were made from expired cough syrup, as they tasted like Robitussin and numbed the back of my throat. Two, incense. With names like Aphrodisia, Black Love, I want to get the Black Love incense. Money House. And he then lists the name of an incense that I cannot say in the air. But slang for a sensitive portion of the female anatomy. He says, why would you name an incense that? Well, whatever. Incidentally, some dirty kids from my high school sophomore year were sent to juvie for shoplifting from a dollar store. If I remember correctly, they stole some Andes mints and batteries. That's what you want to go to jail for, Ian Lacey. What else do we have here? How long until the music starts?
Probably about 40 seconds or so.
All right, Rick, it's a common thread at the end of the show that Scotty is often hungover, and after yesterday's show, he said he gets hungover for a whole day at a time, like he was on Saturday. I'm confused that someone who partakes in the drinking as often as Scotty still hasn't figured out how to avoid a hangover. I should have read this tomorrow. Seriously, is he just a masochist? Why doesn't he just drink buttloads of water and take a vitamin before he goes to sleep like everybody else? Maybe he's just slow.
And oh, little Scotty.
Interesting assessment. Let's see, what else here? Something, Mrs. Butterworth, something. You know, by the time I find something amusing, it's... Oh, there we go. Well, that worked out, didn't it? Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day with the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970, Solid State Radio in the newsroom, Tim Riley, the PA, Scotty J, and, of course, the gatekeepers, Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Lisa Goddard, Steve Kastenbaum, and Jim Roop. Join us tomorrow in the Rick Emerson Show when our guest will be... whoever it is. I think, oh, Mr. Skin tomorrow, and I think Dennis Pitzenbarger, quite possibly. Like is next. Donna Mike at 7. Stephanie Miller tomorrow, 6 to 8. Dennis Miller, 8 to 11. We'll see you in 21 hours. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down. Watch out for snakes, and do try to help the retarded. I raised $30 for the Special Olympics today. What did you do? See you tomorrow. Bye.